This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Now, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Lawson Bram, skidamarinky-dinky-dink.
Yeah.
Skidamarinky-do.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I've wanted to drive that freaking hoe train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much. You who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Gonna do it again. Gonna do it again.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero. I'm going to get you here on this Monday evening inside the PTBN studios. And of course, alongside me, as always, is my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 439 of the Gold Standard, the mothership. How's it going, JR? We had our usual strange weather talk. Sponsored by Weather Underground. Not really.
Right.
Have you noticed, though, the Weather Underground and the Weather Channel are working together? I thought they were, like, hate enemies, but not really.
No, they work together, yeah. I noticed that over the last couple of years. It's AccuWeather seems to be the one against them, so they
the
work
Renegade.
Together.
Yes.
I'm not sure if... I don't know what the point is of having the two of them. I don't know why Weather Channel doesn't just take whatever Weather Underground's doing and just run with that, because they seem to be pretty good, but...
Right, exactly.
Regardless, that's where we're at. And yeah, no, it was another odd weekend here in New England. It was got up to over 70 over the weekend, and... back a little bit cold, of course, as we started the week here on Monday, but it's going to be up and down again throughout the week, I think.
Yeah, I'm knocking on wood. I think we are done with snow. I think we're snowed out for the summer, for the summer.
I looked ahead because I'm trying to plan for basketball. In a couple weeks, they're saying like snow showers, which, you know, usually it amounts to nothing. Like it changes to rain or it just doesn't linger, but I'm hoping that's all it is just like flurries or something.
Yeah, no. We're always looking at this time of year too, because we always have our big fundraiser, our corned beef dinner in March. And again, knock on wood, we haven't. Weather has never been a problem, and usually it's the second or third week in March. So usually we've lucked out. So I have a feeling we're in the clear. We had that one dumper a couple weeks ago, and I think we're good from here on. I'm kind of pumped for a little arsonist action. I'm hoping to hop in on a couple of. See, but the problem is you guys just play on Mondays. Now you play on Wednesdays. You think you'll play on Mondays again?
As I tell Don when he asks me every single year, we play based on the weather and the availability of the people that are going to play that week.
Okay.
And
that is solely I'm just a fan. Don's a whiner. I'm just a fan.
Yeah, every year. I could literally go back through my text messages and probably see where he's asked me in March of every season. What day do you think we're going to play this year? And I'm like, it's literally been the same answer over the past few years. It's like whenever everyone can play and whenever it's not going to rain. Like we used to always have the set day when we only had the same six people or whatever. And it didn't matter. Like, all right, we'll just pick a day and that was it. But now it's like we have all these people, so we try to work it around the weather. So if someone can only play Monday, but it's going to be shitty Monday, we get someone else and we play Tuesday. So that's how I gauge it. I look at the weather the week before, and I ask who's around, and then we go from there. So if it's a Monday, I'll let you know.
Okay. I'd love to play. Finally get onto that take the court.
Yes.
But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I was like, I was
whatever the podcast is before that, everyone should keep it because it may be his Scott Criscolo's last as he gets on the court.
Absolutely not. Are you kidding? Oh, I'm pumped. Ready to go.
All right.
Ready to play.
Anyway, speaking of ready to go, I think we should dive into tonight's show. So hopefully everyone enjoyed last week when we had a special guest with us, Kelly Nelson of the late great Titans of Wrestling and, of course, At the Garden and Imaginary Stories. And we're excited to announce that Kelly has signed a part-time contract here with The Place to Be.
Legends deal.
Yes, Legends deal. So he'll be joining us every 3 or 4 weeks or so on the vault. Always for a house show. That's his specialty. But he had such a good time. The reviews were so good. And we loved having him. Thought he fit right in nicely. So he'll be joining us every 3 or 4 shows. Every 3 or 4 house shows, I should say.
Yeah.
We'll be doing the Saturday Night's Main Events and pay-per-views probably just on our own. But so look forward to that. Look forward to Kelly being back in the groove in a few weeks. So
absolutely. I was actually speaking of JR, and I actually talked about it on Main Event Wednesday with Mr. Helene and the Godfather. I said I was talking about Titans. And again, if you've never listened to it, you've missed out. But there's a nice 77-episode catalog. I love the open with the Fink, and then they do the Super Friends theme. I love it, and I'm actually starting from scratch. I listened to the first few a long time ago, and then I you know, things happen and you don't get a chance to listen, so I'm back to listening from the beginning again. And was listening to episode 2 today, which was March to June 1979, which was the debut of the full crew, Johnny and Pete and Kelly with Parv and James, and they're so good. I mean, I don't even know how much long they knew each other at this point, but
no, they didn't know each other at all. I mean, they went cold to that. Yeah.
Yeah, the chemistry is, it's not like you and I, we knew each other 8 years before we started our show. Yes. But I, you know what?
Fortunately.
You could have Larry on this show.
Oh,
all right. Shit stick. So
we would have got suspended and fired long ago.
Yeah. So, but it's a fantastic show, and I'm listening. And Sorrow's awesome, and they're all so great. So definitely check out the 77-episode catalog that is Titans of Wrestling. It's a tremendous show. So I'm looking forward to having Kelly on.
And you can get that full archive at the Pro Wrestling Only feed on iTunes. So subscribe to all of our feeds.
And on PlacementNation.com in the podcast archive.
Very true.
Also there as well.
Very true.
All right. Let us go, JR, to this evening's festivities. September 23rd, 1985.
Can't believe we're this far into the year already. It seems so far away.
I know. We've been buzzing along. We really have. And this is a great show. Maybe the best house show so far. Your crowd, I was going to say Chad. Graham, same guy. Graham had 18,000. So based on our new kind of clue here, they may have opened up the Felt Forum that day. But 18,000 still a solid crowd. JR, why don't you give us the Sutton Report, including I shouldn't say the B team, but like the 1A team, I should say, in the other venue. But what do we got?
All right, here's our championship roll call, courtesy of Mr. Sutton, as Matt Rotella would say. Hulk Hogan, 609 days into his reign as world champion. Tito Santana, 75 days as intercontinental champion. And Scott, we have brand new tag team champions.
We do.
Unbelievably enough, the Dream Team, Greg Valentine and Brutus Beefcake, have defeated the U.S. Express on the 824 show at the Philadelphia Spectrum, ending Express's 68-day reign. And, of course, the Dream Team now 30 days into their reign. And, you know... I wanted to say this for the next month because we actually see the Dream Team on our next card. So maybe we can wait. At the Saturday's Main Event, we'll have a little bit more time, I think, to dive into it. So why don't we hold off on our thoughts? Because I do have some thoughts on this title change. But why don't we save those when because we don't see either team here on this show. So
No, we don't.
And like I said, we have a lot to cover here. Saturday's Main Event's a little thinner. So we'll cover that next week when we get to that. Wendy Richter still wins champion 176 days into her reign. And calling back to her with the Rock and Wrestling Connection, I meant to send this to our group chat the other day. I was listening to the 80s on 8 countdown yesterday, and Alan Hunter was introducing, you know how they rotate throughout the countdown who introduces the song? So he was doing the one, and it was Girls Just Want to Have Fun, because it was 84. Right. And it was funny, he actually talked about, well, first he started by talking about the video, and then he mentioned Captain Lou, and then he talked about the Rock Wrestling Connection and how he was part of it. So it was kind of cool to hear him talk about
that. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was kind of neat. You know, he said he had to quit. He asked his MTV handlers to get him out of it because it hurt too much, is what he said, physically. So it was cool. Like, he didn't bag on it, or, you know, he was respectful about the experience. So that was kind of neat. But it was cool that I happened to catch that at that time. And by the way, the top end of 84 was a great week this week in 1984. It was a lot of good songs, so.
Yes, yes, it was. Yes, it was. And we'll have this week in 1985 a little bit later on.
Sure thing. Other yep. Dodef cards held on this date in Montreal, the Forum in Quebec. Tiger Lee Chung defeated Ivan Putski.
Tiger Chung Lee.
Tiger Lee Chung is what he has here.
Wasn't he in the WCF?
I should just go with Jarvis. Listen, let me see what he had. Tiger Chung Lee, yes, of course. So
did you really Sun type Tiger Lee Chung?
Well, you know how in Britain they do the date backwards, so maybe he just does the name backwards as well. Because he has Ryan B. Blair. No, he doesn't. But B.
He's
Brian
like
Blair.
Yoda. What is he, like Yoda? He does it backwards.
B. Brian Blair defeated Barry O. Gino Brito Jr. defeated Richard Sharland.
Oh, they sound like locals.
Cousin Jr. and Uncle Elmer defeated Destruction Number 1 and Pierre Lefebvre. Tito Santana defeated Sailor White to retain his Intercontinental
Sailor title. White?
I don't know what the fuck they pulled out on this show. Jacques and Ramon Rougeau defeated Iron Mike Sharp and Rene Goulet.
Who are those guys?
Oh, yeah, I'm talking about that. Jules Leduc defeated Tony, and Tony Atlas went to a draw. And then Dino Bravo and the Tonga Kid defeated the Dream Team. So a lot of new names on this card.
Well, it seemed like a very local show, heavy show, like a lot of Jacques Rougeau Sr., who, of course, ran the local promotion in Montreal, probably a lot of his guys. Jules Leduc. Richard Sharland. It sounds so phony. Right. It sounds like a guy that hosts a talk show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Richard
Sharland
show.
Is he one of the guys on YouTube that like, post all the videos, Richard Sharland? That sounds really familiar, that name, for some reason. Anyway, Kayfabe Memories? Is he on? I don't know. I feel like I've seen that name. Maybe it's just.
I know. Yeah, you might be right, actually. Yeah.
Originally booked for this card was George Wells, and we'll talk about that. He had to withdraw yet again.
The eye thing again?
Yeah, still bug him.
The damn eye thing.
All right, so here's some cool Jarvis notes as we move along. And here's basically what he's doing is catching us up on what's happened since our last outing. And there's a lot that's went down since August. On August 13th, Dodef ran a house show at the Ohio State Fair. Admission to the show was free if you purchased the $4 admission to the fair. And you still have people bitching these days with fucking the admission cost. The six-match card, headlined by Hulk Hogan versus Big John Studd, drew a crowd of 50,000 people. They also ran the State Fair in Michigan on 8/28 and drew a crowd of 30,000 people, headlined by Hogan and Greg Valentine. So pretty robust cards there at these state fairs. Mm. Too bad they didn't make a dime. On 8/17 in Atlanta, unless I wonder if the fair paid them. They must have, right? There's no way they're going
to
run.
Oh, they had to. They're going to do that for free. Not for 50,000 people, anyway.
On 8/17 in Landover, Maryland, one of the first kickouts of the Hulk Hogan leg drop occurred. In a match against Brutus Beefcake, the challenger kicked out of the finisher when Johnny V jumped up on the apron to interfere. So I don't know if it was a timing thing or what, but pretty interesting that Hogan's buddy was the first kickouts of the leg drop. On 8/18 in Toronto, Andre the Giant defeated Big John Studd. During the match, Andre body slammed Studd and was about to cut his hair as revenge when King Kong Bundy interfered. Andre was beaten down by Bundy and Studd, sustaining four splashes from Bundy that were credited with breaking Andre's sternum. And of course, we'll talk way more about that later tonight. That same night in Toronto, Dino Bravo returned to the Dodef after a seven-year absence. Of course, I believe he was a former tag team champion, correct?
Who was that?
Dino
Sorry,
Bravo.
You broke up for a minute. Did Dino ever have the tag titles? I don't know.
Look it up.
Let me look.
Swore he was. On 8/24 episode of Championship Wrestling, after weeks of being scouted, Randy Savage finally revealed his manager. He brought all the managers out to the ring for a show of gratitude, thanked them for their considerations, and indicated that Mr. Fuji and Bobby Heenan especially taught him a lot. Johnny Valiant was thanked for the training regiment he put him on. Sure. he complimented Freddie Blassie for the diamonds given to Savage and indicated that Jimmy Hart just freaks him out. Savage had introduced a mystery woman in a blue sequin gown who walked the ringside, but was not named on that show. Miss Elizabeth would finally be introduced by name on 8/31 episode of Championship Wrestling during Piper's Pit. On 8/24 at a house show in Philadelphia at the Spectrum, the tag team championships changed hands, as we talked about a moment ago. Brutus Beefcake and Greg Valentine defeated Wyndham and Rotundo, and would be the first appearance, Scott, of the classic tag team titles. So,
yes.
On 8/31, the WWF held their first ever card at the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, which would be one of the three sites eventually selected for WrestleMania 2. On September 14th, Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling cartoon premiered. And on September 18th, the WWF had a show at LA Sports Arena. Clips from the main event, Hogan vs. Studd, were later used during an episode of The A-Team. And finally, on September 21st, Championship Wrestling, Bobby Heenan revealed that he would now be the manager of King Kong Bundy after he traded the missing link to Jimmy Hart. He also announced that his bounty on Paul Orndorff had been increased to $50,000. The Manager of the Year award was given to Captain Lou Albano over Bobby Heenan after Hillbilly Jim offered all his votes that he received to Captain Lou. Heenan, Studd, and Bundy then attacked Albano and destroyed the trophy. So, lots going on there over this last month. Anything stand out to you?
A few things. The state fair thing. I mean, 50,000, that's a lot. The leg drop kick out, that must have been a rib. Maybe it was Hogan's birthday or something, and Beefcake wanted to rib him. I don't know. You are correct. One time, Dino Bravo.
Was it with DiNucci?
It was with Dominic DiNucci. It was on, they won it on March 14th, 1978. They beat Mr. Fuji and Professor Tanaka, and then they held it for a few months. They lost it on June 26th at the Garden to the Yukon Lumberjacks, Yukon Eric and Yukon Pierre. Of course, Yukon Eric, infamously, the one who lost his ear via Killer Kowalski.
By the way, you'll hear a lot of a lot about Tanaka and Fuji as you make your way through Titans. And Pete has an awesome, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but an awesome team name that he grants them upon them, bestows upon them, kind of like the Foreign Legion of Stephen Sutton.
Yes.
He gives a great name to them. So I'll let you discover that on your own as you move forward, but it's a good one.
Okay.
All right. So that's it from Mr. Jarvis. So I think we can go ahead and dive right in.
All right. So there you go. So yeah, as mentioned, the house show is at the Forum in Montreal. Mm-hmm. Okay. Our opener, speaking of foreigners, is two of them, both from areas very close to the, same place, one from England, one from Scotland. What is our opener?
Well, first I wanted to mention, too, that we have a new, brand new announcer here on the show, and that is Jesse Ventura, stepping in for Lord Al tonight alongside Gorilla Monsoon. Of course, Jesse had really ramped up his duties in 85, called Mania, was given the slot on Primetime Wrestling. I think he was doing some other TV stuff, too, and here we go at the MSG show. So it was a nice change of pace. I liked Al. Al was good. But
oh, I loved Al. This is actually, I think this is Jesse's first trip to the building since WrestleMania, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've seen him in matches or on commentary since WrestleMania. So this is his first visit back since March.
Correct.
So very cool.
Yeah,
I was pumped.
We heard
his
him
voice
at Saturday Night's Main Event, but first time here
right.
at the Garden. Yeah.
First time here at the Garden, but he was on Saturday Night's Main Event. Yes, correct.
Like you mentioned, London is calling for the show.
Yes.
To open the show. So we do have a debut as well. The man, first of all, across the ring is our buddy Les Thornton, who we talked about last month. He is mm-hmm. battling one and only Scott McGee.
Scotty McGee.
Garfield Gary Ports, who wrestled under the ring name Scott McGee, was trained by Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, and Buddy Rogers. McGee made his wrestling debut in 1979, worked as a referee in Jim Crockett Promotions, sometimes substituting for wrestlers. Throughout the early 80s, bounced around the NWA territories with multiple stints in Jim Crockett Promotions and Florida Championship Wrestling. Held the NWA Florida Global Tag Team titles four times with Magnum TA, three with Magnum TA, once with Mike Graham. I'm sure everyone held the Florida title with Mike Graham. Also held the NWA Florida Heavyweight Championship three times, wrestled Ric Flair and Harley Race multiple times in 1983. McGee teamed with Johnny Weaver at the inaugural Starrcade 83 event against Kevin Sullivan and Mark Purple Haze Lewin. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good old Garfield. Of course, that's more for Thornton than the big old Gar. But
by the river, you can play the Bay City Rollers. I think they were Scottish. I don't think of any of the Scottish bands. Men Without Hats? No, I don't know.
Les, back in the house this week, opens things up against Scotty McGee. Gorilla and Jesse already have that great banter going just minutes into the show. They're right out of the gate. They're on a roll. Yes. Thornton controls things to start, grabs the arm, working into the mat. McGee tries to reverse his way out, but Les keeps control of the hold while rolling around. McGee finally twists the hold around to his own armbar and eventually into a top wrist lock. Lee punches his way out of it, but McGee hits a great counter and remains in control on the mat, turning into pin covers while keeping a tight face lock. The reversals and counters continue to flow between both men, again ending with McGee in a face lock or holding a face lock. Les finally breaks free of the hold and clocks McGee with a stiff uppercut that sends McGee to the floor to regroup. Les meets him with some kicks as he comes back in, but Scotty comes right back and went into the face lock as Jesse talks about his MSG debut and what the arena means to him. Les dodges a drop kick or a leg drop, but McGee pops right up and lands a flurry of uppercuts. Gorilla said his technique isn't that good, and his uppercuts aren't as good as Les Thornton's. And right on cue, Les buries one of his own for a near fall before turning into a chin lock, which he kept cranked in, alternating with crucifix pin covers as well. Les breaks the hold but misses a knee drop, giving McGee a chance to turn him into a Boston Crab. But Les quickly grabs the ropes for the break. McGee went back to his face lock, but Les powers out and slams McGee hard to the mat for a near fall. That one shook up McGee bad as he's limping and favoring his elbow. Les shoots McGee into the corner but misses on a charge. A moment later, both men collided off a whip, but they got up when McGee caught Les at a monkey flip and rattled him with a dropkick that sent him careening to the floor. McGee suplexes Les back in the ring, but took too long to climb to the top and misses the splash. McGee then recovers and takes Les down, but Les bridges out of the cover, and McGee stays calm and twists into a jackknife pin cover for the hard-fought win. I thought this was fine. It was well-executed, just a little too long and bland at times, especially for an opener. I thought they did a nice job amping it up in the final minutes and getting the crowd into things, but the finish kind of comes out of nowhere too. McGee gets a nice win. I don't think there's much else to say here. This may have been a little bit better, like, as like the second or third match with a hotter opener. I went a star and a half. But again, technically fine. Just nothing to get your titties twisted or anything, anything like that.
Tiger Lee Chung's titties.
Right.
It was kind of a strange opener in the sense that, you know, it was kind of two glorified jobbers, really. As great as Les Thornton and his career is, and, you know, Scotty Gordon, whatever his name was, Glumpy Gordon. See, just hearing Jesse's voice makes any match great. I like this. I like this match, actually. I'm going to give it 2.5. I actually liked it. I like the pacing. A little slow with some of the headlocks, but I kind of dug the the kind of European approach that the match took. And I think we see this throughout this entire show, JR, is we see a lot of real, real in-ring storytelling.
Yeah. 2.5. That's like a, I mean, it may as well be 4.5 on a house show in 85, right? You liked it that much, huh?
I really did. I thought it was really good. I think they told a good story. I think they were given enough. I mean, JR, they got I don't have it open at the moment. I'll have to check. I think the
18:20.
Was it that long?
Yeah, I felt every minute of it.
It didn't feel that long. See, I'm the opposite. It didn't feel that long to me. It's really weird. Yeah,
I really enjoyed it.
You know what? I'll give it a 2.
All right,
I'll half star.
I like that they worked the counters and the holds. I feel like maybe it was like 6 or 7 minutes too long. Like some of that early slogging through the holds. If they would have gotten through that a little bit quicker and into the heat segment, and I know that's the style, and I know it's a different era. It's just tough when you're sitting down at the Garden. And you get into it, and then you're watching this. But, I mean, maybe it's by design. Maybe they did it because people were rolling in still, and they didn't want to throw out a hot match, so they just kind of... But I think back to that April show, which is our previous, I think, best show we've watched from a house show point of view. Mm-hmm. And remember, they opened with... That was the junior heavyweight title match, right, that we watched?
You know what? I'll check right now. April. The April opener...
It was a Tiger Mask, right? Whatever.
Was it the... Or Cobra? Right?
Cobra, I guess. Dynamite Kid, that's what it was.
Let me see. April 20...
Not that
right. April 22nd. It was Cobra and Barrio.
That's what it was. So what am I thinking? What was the second match on that card?
The second match was Fujinami and Matt Bourne.
Okay, maybe I was thinking of the guys. And I thought we saw like a hot opener. Maybe not.
The May opener was Rocky Johnson and Renegade.
No,
that
was
it.
No, that's right. We're good. I'm thinking the April show. I think I'm just thinking of the guys involved. I don't know. Anyway.
Tito and the Executioner.
Maybe it's my mindset of the, you know, not being in that era, but maybe the idea was to let it open a little cool as people filtered into the arena. I'm not sure, but an 18 minute match that featured a ton of like mat work to start just felt like not the best way to start the show. That's all. But again, everything was technically fine. I mean, they worked like a fine match. It just was not the most exciting match.
Right. I don't know. I kind of enjoyed the way that and Jesse, let's put it this way. I don't know. I mean, if it was Gorilla and Alfred, the match maybe would have sounded like a 4.5-star match because that was right up Alfred's alley with the European style. But I just like the story they told. They really went out. You had a combination of an old grizzled British wrestler and a kind of a young, you know, strapping Scottish wrestler, and they went over the whole thing with the uppercuts, and they were doing these cool like. Scotty McGee was doing these cool like power flips out of moves, and I don't know. I was just really impressed. I don't know. I mean, I think we'll see better matches obviously from now, and maybe even a couple better matches on this show. But I don't know. I really liked it. I thought
Did
it was
you
a good.
See anything
opener.
In McGee in this match? Like, was he anyone that could maybe potentially have some sort of run, or is he someone that?
I think he was just a solid. Just a guy. Well, I think he was a solid. In-ring guy. I mean, obviously he had to kind of spice his personality up a little bit because he didn't have much of that, but I think he was a solid worker. I don't know if he would have been anything other than a jobber, but I just thought they had a good opener. I thought it was a better opener than I thought. I think Jesse and Gorilla really helped it.
Mm-hmm.
I
do like Thornton's uppercuts too. Like I thought it was interesting that Gorilla called it out because he has definitely worked tighter and crisper than McGee's, and I thought it was cool that Gorilla noted that. And then right after he says it, like Thornton just rocks him with one. I like of all the guys we've seen in this role of, you know, early card veteran hand to get a guy over, like Thornton's actually been one of the better ones we've seen, I think, in these two, you know, the 2 weeks we've seen him. So I'm actually kind of hoping we see more of him because I think his of all those guys, his offense feels the most crisp, and he, you know, his timing on the comebacks and everything else seem better than some of the other guys we've seen on these shows.
Yeah, I agree. I hope we see more of them too. But I'm the reverse of you. I didn't realize it was 18-20. I didn't have Graham's site open when I first started watching it, so I didn't know how long the match was, but it didn't feel like that long. It honestly didn't. So I was impressed. I'll give it two. I won't go 2.5, but it was definitely 2 stars for a house show match. It was a lot better, I think, than it seemed for me. But Scott McGee gets the win with a nice reverse roll up into a nice bridge. A lot of good power moves, nice reversals. And I think Jesse and Gorilla kind of painted a good picture of it. So
what a fucking McGee mark you are.
Well, he'd have a better gimmick if his name was whatever that. What's his real name? Gordon Sumner.
Garfield. If he was really into lasagna, he would have been much better.
Garfield. His name's Garfield Lasagna. That's a tremendous name. I think Johnny Sorrow would love that name. Garfield Lasagna. Garfield Lasagna. Anyway, Garfield Lasagna gets the win in 18-20 over Les Thatcher or whatever.
Doris. No. All right.
Dun, 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 dun. All right. Next up, another one of our favorite MSG friends, although I think this might be his last match.
It is.
Our last match against a guy that does in we're in this weird transition stage of Bobby the Brain Heenan's family. He's got all these kind of weird guys bouncing in and out, and this guy's one of them.
Yes, and transitioning is the word for him. But we'll talk more about that. Rick McGraw, sir, it is indeed his final MSG appearance. He would pass away on November 1st, 1985, of a heart attack. Of course, if you look at him, you can see why.
Why? He had to carry such a giant ass.
In his auto. Well, no. You always get him confused with San Martino.
Oh, San Martino. That's right.
McGraw, though, does have about probably 150 extra pounds of muscle that he does not need on his frame.
That is true.
Bret Hart, his autobiography, said that he regularly consumed Placidils and suggested that being the result in his heart failing. And the sad part about this, I think we mentioned it last week a little bit, was that we just watched those TNTs where they show off like his wedding pictures and everything, and he seemed like all happy. Remember they're in the pool, jumping in the pool and everything.
Yep.
You know, he was just kind of getting going with that, and then you know he died a few months later. So it's kind of a little additionally sadness added into this. His last match would be in Elizabeth, New Jersey, at the Dunn Sports Arena on October 28th. Fought Iron Mike Sharp. Right before that, 2 days earlier in Columbus, Ohio, he and Randy Savage went to a 10-minute. Oh, Savage pinned him at 10 minutes. So that was one of McGraw's last main matches. And then, of course, 11-1, he passed away. And then on December 16th in Charlotte, North Carolina, they actually held a Rick McGraw Memorial Show. Hogan and Bundy were in the main event of that. So
That was cool. I didn't know that.
There you go. And he is fighting, Scott, Adrian Adonis, who we've talked about multiple times here on the show. But, yeah, still kind of, you know, working his way through this gimmick. It seems like a gimmick change. He's still with Bobby Heenan, carrying the Trudy, Relax a Trudy briefcase, which confounds Jesse, who says maybe it's a blow-up doll. Heenan is up the bounty to $50,000, like we mentioned earlier. Jesse thinks maybe Adonis is the bodyguard for the money, and that's what the briefcase is holding, because the briefcase is handcuffed to Bobby's hand, so... still no hints as to what's in that briefcase, but Adonis and Heenan are guarding it quite closely. McGraw's in his usual spot here, showing some angst as Adonis disrobes. Jesse tries to bait Gorilla into going after the bounty by telling him he could have a lot of fun in Atlantic City with all that cash. Gorilla's funny. He's like, I don't need that much money to have fun at Atlantic City or something.
Yeah, yeah, did say, yeah, he said exactly that, actually, yeah.
Of course, renowned for loving Atlantic City was Gorilla. Gorilla doesn't think Bobby or manager should be allowed to sit at ringside, and Gorilla knows that Adonis has packed on 25 extra pounds, and he did it to add some force behind that new reverse bulldog finisher of his. Mm-hmm. Adonis takes control of the arm to open, as Jesse says he'll work on his connections with Heenan and Adonis, of course, former tag team partners, to find out the contents of the briefcase. Adonis continues to work the arm as Gorilla and Jesse then debate the Manager of the Year award, which, as Jeff mentioned earlier, Lou Albano won over Bobby Heenan when Hillbilly Jim allotted all of his votes to Albano. Seems a little fishy, but whatever. Adonis buries some heavy knees in the corner after a sloppy arm drag counter by McGraw. Adrianus pitches Quick Draw to the floor and then keeps kicking away at him as he tries to get back in. Adrian viciously snaps Quick Draw back into the ring and then returns to work on the arm, mixing in some choking when Heenan tries to tie up the referee. Adonis keeps levying heavy blows and then snaps McGraw hard into the bottom rope with a slingshot before shoving Quick Draw to the floor. Bobby slowly sneaks over and crushes Quick Draw on the head with the case and then scampers away. The crowd works to piss off Heenan and rally McGraw, who slowly climbs on the apron. Adonis suplexes him into the ring but dings up his shoulder in the process. Adonis then slowly heads up top, but Quick Draw shakes the ropes and Adrian falls and crotches himself as the crowd gets fired up. McGraw hammers away and shoots Adrian hard into the post, followed by a big suplex for two. McGraw tries to roll up Adrian, but Adrian hooks the ropes to block the hold and then follows with his reverse bulldog for the win. I thought it was a really fun match. I thought the offense and psychology by Adonis was great. I thought McGraw's selling was pretty sharp here. The ending sequence was really good, too, with all the shoulder stuff from Adonis and then right into the finish. I went 2 stars with this one, but I'm also a big Adonis fan. I love his bumping. I love his offense. Everything he does seems to have a purpose, you know, whether it's using Heenan, whether it's pitching a guy to the floor and then continuously hammering him as he's trying to get back in. Like, he just does everything he does is with authority and a purpose. He's constantly interacting with the crowd. You know, he's a guy I always liked. I'm learning to like him even more through this process. And I think he's pretty underrated by maybe more general fans that haven't watched a lot of this era of him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even when he puts on all the weight in a couple of years and you know, does the adorable gimmick, which we'll get to, he was still a great bumper and worker. But watching him here is like, you know, before he put that much weight on. And we talked about his stuff with Murdoch, but this little period here still, just seeing how much of a confident worker and great veteran he is. I really enjoy when his matches are on the card. I get excited to watch him.
Yeah, I think you also liked his faux New York Yankee yeah, wrestling
that,
boots.
That is well, and his jacket, his sweet jacket, too. At the
and the sweet jacket as well, yes. Yeah, I love Adonis. 2 stars myself. Just as good as our opener, except for different reasons.
And by the way, Adonis just 10:06.
10:06, yes. I actually have it. I have it open up, but thank you, though. Yes, 10:06. I think this is the one thing I think that we're going to keep loving about this show tonight as we keep talking about it is I feel like all the there's a certain psychology, a purpose, a story that these guys are bringing into every match that we normally don't see. A lot of them are just 3-minute throwaways. I don't see that anywhere except actually till the end tonight. But most of these first two, these guys went out and I'll give Rick McGraw his due, God rest his soul, that he helped kind of tell the story with Adonis.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times he comes out and he's looking a little too bubbly, a little too you know, beefy. Which, by the way, Adonis looks very beefy. This is the first time you really notice it, but it didn't affect him.
He's packed down 25 pounds.
Yeah, 25 pounds, and he really, I mean, you notice it. But again, didn't hurt him. Didn't affect anything. He was you know, commanding the ring. He was working with McGraw very well. Like you said, he interacted with the crowd, no wasted motions. He's working around the outside. I mean, it's fantastic. He is a underrated worker, in my opinion, in this era. And you know, I applaud both of them in this match because they gave more than you thought they would, particularly McGraw. But mm-hmm. but Adonis is just so good. And he actually fits with Bobby, and you kind of wonder, you know, if the adorable gimmick never happened, he would have been a pretty good guy in Bobby's family as time progressed. You know, I think the new whole New York thing fit that the attitude and the kind of style of Bobby's faction, but obviously that would change, but. I like the match a lot. Definitely 2 stars. Definitely 2 stars. And I hope we continue seeing more of Adrian Adonis. And 10:06, perfect length. So there you go. Adrian Adonis gets the victory.
Yeah, and the Heenan thing's interesting. I mean, obviously, we'll kind of see where it goes. But
right.
Yeah, I'm curious where the Trudy thing is going. And Bobby, you know, there's a tie there with the money. But is it not? It's weird how he just kind of picked up Heenan. And they, like, all of a sudden, Heenan becomes the garter. I guess what I'm trying to say, Heenan has this weird role early on where he's like, I'll say desperate, but I guess it played into kind of the role or the thought of the managers of that time, like how they're always looked at as complete top to bottom business managers. Because like we saw him with Missing Link where he's in the cave roasting the meat and now he's here like handcuffing Adonis' briefcase. Like he's very, very hands on and dedicated to his clients
mm-hmm.
At this point. It's kind of cool to see. I mean, I've been enjoying Heenan being like this. You know, in later years, he kind of just becomes the driving force. But here, he's like, it's almost like he's working hard to build up his name and clientele and resume. So he's working hard to be the man, you know, manager of the people in a way. Like he's working hard to individualize his guys and do what he needs to do to make them happy. It was kind of a cool touch, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a different, and we're going to see it later in the show how he almost goes overboard with it.
Right.
But then he doesn't have to deal with that anymore. All right, we go backstage, JR, to kind of we don't see this very often, kind of a random interview in the middle of the early portion of the show. Who is it?
Gorilla Monsoon chats with Randy Savage backstage. Macho Man says he won't discuss his match tonight with Romo, which was funny. Unless it was just the way he was saying Roma. It sounded like he kept saying Romo. I don't know.
I think he was saying Romo. Yeah. I agree. I think he was saying Romo. Paul Romo.
Tony Romo. But instead he calls out Hulk Hogan. He's more focused on Hogan's world title. So he's continuing his push for a title match. Not a fan of Tony Romo, though. I'm wondering what he thinks of the Cowboys, maybe cutting him or trading him. We'll have to see.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he wanted to, you know, play for the St. Louis. Well, there's no team in St. Louis anymore, so we don't know. Mm-hmm. We go back to the ring, and this is exactly the match we have. Tony Romo and Randy Savage not wearing a Dak Prescott jersey.
Savage back this month, accompanied by his brand-new manager, Scott, Miss Elizabeth. Like we talked about earlier, shockingly beat out all the other managers that had been courting Savage. Before we get into the match, do you want to talk about that?
I thought it was an awesome storyline.
Role and the idea of him going that route?
I thought it was an awesome storyline. And I think it was a good swerve. Because Macho Man, believe it or not, his persona and his energy would have overwhelmed these managers. It's almost like he didn't even need them. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
This was a perfect guy for him, or a guy. Right. The perfect manager for him was Elizabeth. She was quiet. She was petite. She was gorgeous.
Right. Like, yeah, he doesn't need Bobby Heenan talking for him. He doesn't need Jimmy Hart. I mean, him Johnny and Jimmy Valiant. Hart worked well together in Memphis, but yeah, definitely not Johnny V.
No.
I mean, maybe like a Fuji, like even though he's not devious, but at least Fuji's not like a talker. He's just kind of there. I think Jimmy Hart probably is the natural one just because of their work in the past. They would have worked well together, but. Mm. I'm with you. I don't think you needed one. I think it was a good choice.
Nope. I thought it was a great choice. And it kind of not only put Elizabeth over, but it kind of put over a Savage as a great heel for this reason. So
right. Exactly. Right. And you know, we'll see how he uses her. Yep. Fink, before the match, introduces Otto Vons from Germany. Who's here to wave to the crowd. JBL's favorite. Romo, still working his way up the ladder, looking for that key win. It's a good opportunity for him. Of course, Liz gets a huge ovation for the crowd, and Jesse jokes that she should be manager of the year. And obviously, talking about her looks, he doesn't say it, but implies it. Jesse also says Savage knows how to treat women, because he keeps Liz in her place as she sits there holding the ropes open forever as he stands around. And he says Savage keeps her in line, and as Savage barks at her and comes close to smacking her. We get into the match. Lots of stalling, because Savage bitches at the ring attendant, the fans, and Liz, and then finally gets going. Roma lands the first big blow, flipping Savage over with an arm drag, but Macho answers with one of his own. Savage grabs Roma by the head and clotheslines him across the top rope while leaping to the floor. Savage quickly pounces, landing knees to the chest as Jesse gushes about Macho Man, calls him his tag team partner. Gorilla asks what Liz has to offer Savage beyond just being beautiful. Roma grabs a couple of near falls off flash roll-ups, but Savage just slugs him to the mat and heads up top. Roma meets Savage with a punch to the gut as he comes off. And Roma slams Savage and also heads up, and it's a big sunset flip for two. Roma charges hard, but Savage ducks and flips him to the floor, where Roma collides hard into the barricade. Savage follows him out and shoves him inside as the bell rings by accident. Savage then throws Roma right back out to the floor, meets him with an axe handle blow off the top, and then back inside hits a perfect vertical suplex and buries Roma with the flying elbow. But he picks him up at two while covering him. Savage then hits another elbow and gets the win. I thought it was a fun squash, and Savage's offense is so crisp and effective with nonstop motion, as always, from him. I went one star, which to me is pretty high when I consider a squash match where Roma got like zero offense in. So I really like this. I thought it was a good introduction to Liz, and I thought Savage looked great. And, you know, as edgy as some of the stuff was, it, you know, at the time in 85, I guess threatening, you know, spousal abuse or whatever wasn't as big of a deal, but
no, I guess not.
You know, but anyway, it's there to build him up as an even bigger heel, and you know, Jesse's kind of toeing the line or walking the line as well when he condones the action. But it's interesting to see, you know, how they'll use Liz with the Savage package to continue to get him over as a heel.
Yeah, first off, I'd rather just talk about the great Otto Vons.
Otto Vons.
You know why? Otto Vons is one of those guys. He was always in books. He was always in the After Mags. That George Napolitano book that you talk about, mm-hmm. That same book I had, he's mentioned in there, but I don't even think there's a picture. Like, for years, I never knew what the fucking guy looked like.
Right.
He was never in any of the, like, PWI or anything. He just always mentioned, you know, WWF in Stuttgart, Germany. Otto Vons retains the European Heavyweight Championship. Like, who's this Otto Vons? And then finally, you know, he actually shows up with his white suit. Like a fucking maitre d' at like a fucking Polish restaurant or something. He like, comes out with his white jacket on. He's like, hey, I got a table of schnitzel for you. It's like so weird. But hey, there he is. Otto Vons. Anyway, let's talk about an actual athlete. Savage is just is the man. And I said this, I've said this almost on every show that he's been on. You don't, not every heel gets to use Hogan in his promos. So the fact that he constantly mentions Hogan, you know that he's a beast who's, you know, he's a player. And you're going to see some house show matches soon. I mean, I think he obviously won't win the belt right now, but he's definitely a player. He's just got a personality that's over the top. He's an incredible worker. He'll get what I love about it is he'll become an even better worker down the line. Right now, he still kind of uses the Memphis shtick, but I mean, yeah, it's only Paul, Tony Romo, so it doesn't really matter. But the match 6:57, and there's just more to come. I don't know what else there is to say in this instance. There's just more to come from Savage. Elizabeth just adds even more greatness because, again, she's not going to talk a lot. She's not going to barely talk at all. She's beautiful. Kind of fits Savage's persona of having this little side piece with him. And he just wouldn't have fit with a guy like Bobby or anything like that because they would have been a waste. Would have been a waste of space.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's no point in eating up a spot in their stables with him. And he he can use Liz in many, many ways. She can be distracting, but he can also, like we said, build heat by threatening her and using
her
as
like
a
dirt.
Shield and treat her like shit. And it was an interesting way to take the character. But he moves quickly into that role. You know, like we saw him, you know, whatever, the last couple of months, and he's just a stud, and now all of a sudden here he's kind of a wife abuser. Whatever, you know, so it's an interesting twist. But we saw him on a couple of TNTs, too, where he just came off like a star. I mean, immediately just dominates the set and comes across like a beast across the board. So it was cool to see how quickly he developed. Like you said, I mean, how many guys leap right into feuds, or at least, you know, calling out Hulk Hogan shows you how much they thought of him to have him in that spot.
Yep, absolutely. So,
farewell, Otto Vons.
Heaven schnitzel in Otto Vons. Oh, tremendous. 99 schnitzels for Otto Vons. All right. Big win for a Savage, and we move on. Speaking of lots of schnitzel and other sorted cooked meats that have been digested, it is time now, JR, for what I think would have been a tremendous early WWF pay-per-view title.
Yeah, or a Coliseum videotape.
Or a Coliseum. Yes, even better. Tell me you wouldn't have purchased, as long as it didn't have any fucking scumbag hillbillies on it, the World Wrestling Federation's Colossal Jostle.
I think that's what happened when Rich broke your collarbone. Wasn't that the St. Mary's Day Colossal Jostle?
Yes, it was. St. Mary's Day Colossal Jostle.
Jostled your collarbone right out of its
jostled my collar right out of the fucking skin almost. Yeah. This feud coming up, we're talking JR, is multi-city, two stars.
Two stars in the ring, not two-star rating is what you're saying.
Oh, no, two-star rating. I'd give this six. No.
Come down there, Davey Meltzer.
I know. Yeah. 7.5 for the Otto Vons. No. It's a multi-show feud that's been building and building, and here we are.
Yeah, and it really started up in Toronto, like we mentioned, when Bundy and Stud beat the shit out of him, and Bundy dropped the big kibosh across his sternum, busted that up, and Andre's favoring it here. The promotion, I thought, definitely feels more exciting with Andre back in regular action. Do you agree?
I agree, 100%. Mm-hmm. Andre's a guy that will always fire up a crowd, no doubt about it.
Jimmy Hart still with Bundy here, even though he worked with Stud in that attack, and as we find out, Bundy would get traded a couple days later. But Jimmy's still here, which surprised me. I thought it would be Heenan by this point.
Right, me too.
Andre has a new manager as well, Scott, Captain Lou Albano, which I don't remember at all. Like, I know he was with him a couple times, but it totally caught me off guard when he said when he's like with his new manager, Lou Albano. I was like, what? Really? I didn't know it was like an official thing, you know?
Fucking break. Oh, my God. What's next? We'll randomly see him at Hogan House shows now, too?
All right. Well, he was over. Him and Andre get a huge pop.
Well, that's one guy. I got to tell you something. If we ever, as I'm listening to these early Titans of Wrestling, Johnny Cesaro is a huge fucking Albano mark.
Yeah.
He was marking out.
In fairness, he's a big mark of everyone. But yes.
Well, he's a mark of marks, so that is true. But, it's just, oh, my God. How many guys have to manage? Every single baby? It's like he's like watching the...
I think they just felt like every big name at this point like needed a man. Like a manager that's so big, and Albano's really the only face manager they have. So, I don't know. I feel like maybe they thought by associating the two of them, it made the star package even bigger. Like that. It's just weird that they say he's a new manager instead of saying, like, he's with him tonight to offset because he keeps getting attacked. You know, or something like that. It's weird that they felt like they had to make it like it was an official thing. I guess that's the odd thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Like,
but
they could have just said he's with him for the night, you know, or during this, whatever. Like, they could have called it out in commentary. Like, Andre's enlisted Albano to help offset all the interference as of late since his return. Something like that. I mean, minor thing, but it's just odd
right. That
to make it like he's going to manage him full time. So anyway, Albano marches around and fires up the crowd as Gorilla reminds us of what Bundy did to Andre in Toronto. Andre wastes no time going right at Bundy, wildly choking away him in the corner and then levels him with a hard chop. Andre keeps pouring it on, choking away like crazy as Jesse's are screaming for a DQ, but the ref just lets it go. The rattle Bundy bails to the floor as Andre just stands in the ring and laughs, which is awesome. Bundy returns and tries to lock up. Andre grabs him with a choke. Bundy breaks that up with a punch to the heart and then clobbers away in the corner. Andre fends him off with punches and kicks, but Bundy leans into him and slugs away. Andre breaks free with a headbutt and smacks Bundy to the mat. Bundy goes right back to the tender sternum, knocking Andre to his knees. Jesse thinks Andre came back too soon and he wasn't properly healed yet. Bundy kicks away at Andre, eventually driving him to the floor. Andre fights through Bundy as he gets back in and lays in some chops before working the arm to force Bundy to his knees. Andre twists that into a body scissors while still clutching the arm. Jesse rips Albano hard as Andre keeps working the hold until Bundy eventually breaks free. Both men get up and Andre just levels Bundy with a chop and a headbutt, sending Bundy to the floor. And Scott, I think this is the best bump we've seen since we started the show. He levels Bundy, with the chop and the headbutt, and Bundy just takes his bump to the floor where he flips out through the ropes and goes straight on his back, clips the table on the way down, and his flat bump on his back on the concrete floor. It was gross. I mean, it was really sick. If you look at the post on PlayStation.com, I have the aftermath of Bundy's face as he landed, but it's worth checking this clip out. You know, if you're not going to watch a whole show or you're just going to pick out parts, the bump Bundy takes here is like, it is unbelievable for a guy his size that he takes his bump. The way he clips the table on the way down, too. So Bundy slowly climbs back in, grimacing, as Andre has his big smirk on his face. He grabs his arm again. Bundy finds daylight and starts to target the sternum. But Andre chops Bundy off before walking around the ring to work off the chest pain. Bundy charges, but Andre catches him and works the arm again. Bundy goes back to the sternum, which sends Andre to the mat in pain. Bundy keeps clobbering and choking and stomping away until Andre fights to his feet. While the crowd is rallying him, things escalate quickly as Andre buries Bundy in the corner and crushes him with a boot to the face as Bundy comes charging in. Andre drops an elbow and goes for a pin, but Big John Studd shows up and attacks Andre for the DQ. Andre fights him off as well until Bundy recovers and splashes Andre in the corner. Bundy and Studd work over Andre until Albano until Andre slips free and rolls out to the floor. Andre grabs a chair and storms back in, but Studd and Bundy retreat. I thought it was a hell of a match, Scott. Post-angle was great with the two hosses just slugging the shit out of each other until the DQ. If they would have taken out that head scissors shit, I think this could have really been even higher of a grade because it would have been a little quicker. I know they need a little bit of breather, Andre and Bundy, so it's fine, but to me that limited the potential a bit. Bundy's bump to the floor was sick, and the crowd was super into this. A lot of excitement, a hot feud, red hot now. That'll continue on over the next couple months for us. I go 2.5 stars here, which I think when you look at these guys on paper is a huge overachieve for Andre and Bundy. As great as Andre was, I mean, you know, the injuries are piling up on him, and we've only seen Bundy really work a lot of squash matches here on the WWF so far. So seeing him go out there and put this match on, and he clearly knew it was a big deal with that bump he took. To me, that was worth the admission alone on the show. So I went 2.5 for this one, and I really dug watching it and loved it a lot.
It was fantastic. I mean, you could have easily had this match last as the main event of the whole show. And I look at the length again. I didn't put Graham's totals in front of me when I was watching it because I didn't want to anticipate the end. I wanted to see what would happen. And then I look and I said 13:50. That was a sprint for those two guys. And I mean, Bundy just landed like a sack of shit. Uh-huh. I mean, he just
it was such
slapped
a thud.
The He just went, I mean, he literally slid. It was like that bump that Del Rio used to take where he slides through the second rope. That's literally what happened. He did not stop himself.
But he didn't hit through it. He didn't just go, like, out on his back. He, like, yeah, I mean, he, like, flips upside down in midair as he's going through the ropes and his, like, nails the table and boom, hard on his back. I mean, it was a hell of a bump.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. He does clip the table. Yeah, I was stunned at that bump. And Andre was even moving around pretty good.
Yeah, no, he looked good. Yeah.
You know, it and was.
I love his arrogance. I just love his, like, smirks as like Bundy's out there like dying on the floor. He's just standing there, kind of chuckling at him. Like, it's such a good Andre, classic Andre. Just like, huh, fuck you. You think you can mess with me? I'm the giant. Good luck.
Yeah, no, it was tremendous. And Bundy, but Bundy like didn't take any shit. I mean, he worked it. It was just a great back and forth battle of just two fucking hosses. I mean, this was right in our wheelhouse, JR. Just two big hosses just pummeling each other. And I mean, obviously Andre is not he can't move as well as he used to, but even at this point. But still, I mean, the crowd was molten hot. Yeah, I almost feel like, I mean, Jimmy Hart gets in hot feuds, and we're going to talk about another one of his matches involving him later. But like, this doesn't seem like a Jimmy Hart feud. This is a Bobby feud, and I've been saying that a lot these last few house shows about how some of these managers there's a tone to their feuds. There's a way they go about things, and this seemed more like a Bobby feud than a Jimmy Hart feud. And
right,
it didn't detract from it. It was just so well done. And it was good to see like Andre really move around and Bundy take bumps. And I mean, when he took that headbutt and then he just landed in the ring with a thud, that was right at the at the end there, before Andre did that, whatever he did, that knee drop or whatever the hell that was, that led Stud to go into the ring. Bundy, I don't know if we'll ever see Bundy take these kind of bumps again. I really don't. I mean, he threw himself. He put Andre over. And obviously you should, because he's Andre. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he threw himself around like you wouldn't believe for a guy that, you know.
Yeah, you could tell that he knew this was, like, a big shot for him, you know what I mean? So he was trying to really make a statement. And he did. He really did.
He absolutely did. So Andre wins by DQ. Again, your runtime, 13:50. And, again, another match that didn't seem like it was that long. I'm telling you, it's the way these matches are tonight. They don't seem like they're as long as the lengths are.
And it's cool, too, that, I mean, they found a new way to breathe some life into the Stud stuff. Because Stud's been claiming since Mania that Andre never slammed him, he can't be slammed. And it's kind of like, all right, how much more can you do? Andre kind of got his revenge already. So now they double down with another huge beatdown. And they pretty much form a new union. It'll fully come into shape in the next month. Well, 2 days later, really. I thought it was a really nice job they did of adding some extra invigoration to this feud that seemed like maybe it was done. And it's a big spot for Bundy. You know, we talked about how he slowly worked his way up with some great squashes, and now boom, all of a sudden we turn around and he's in a major feud with Andre the Giant. I really dug this.
Yep, I absolutely did as well.
Plus, it's a colossal jostle.
It is the colossal WWF's colossal jostle. You're really pissed. You wish you had thought of that in 1996, didn't you?
Well, that's
Samuel the Giant and Van Burton in the Colossal Jostle.
Those were Rotella on that elliptical a couple of years ago. It was a Colossal Jostle.
Yes! Indeed. The Grey Goose Jostle. All right. Next up, interesting match here because it seems kind of random for one main reason, and I'll get to it when I get to my comments, but a couple of favorites of ours, JR. What do we got?
We have Bob Orton, Cowboy Ace. Taking on Special Delivery Jones, who again is filling in for George Wells here tonight, still injured. I'm kind of mad. George Wells and Orton would have been awesome. SD, I'm half facetious, but SD is back in the house, who I always enjoy seeing him, rocking his Phillies colors. Gorilla notes, we've never seen Special Delivery's hair so short, so they're calling that out. Orton is still rocking the cast to protect his never-healing arm, which of course is going on 8 months now. We've seen some of that play out on TNT, where doctors are claiming he's okay, but Orton's still saying he's hurting. Orton buries Jones with a shoulder block, but SD recovers and slams Orton down. Jones starts to work the injured arm, smacking the cast and twisting it around. Orton tries to escape, but SD drags him back in the ring and keeps the pressure on, using submission holds and strikes to target the cast. Orton finally slugs SD to turn the tide and then goes to work with some stiff kicks followed by a head scissors. Jones works free and grabs hold of the cast to force Orton bound to his back. Special delivery blocks a hip toss. Keeps twisting the arm until Cowboy cuts that off and goes back to the neck with a chin lock and a hard clubbing blow for two. Orton keeps mixing in strikes between chin locks and the catches. Jones on a leapfrog attempt and hits an inverted atomic drop for two. Orton goes back to grinding on a chin lock until SD fights free and punches away before shooting Orton hard into the corner. SD levels Orton with headbutts and punches that eventually knock Cowboy to the edge of the apron. SD keeps bringing the heat until Orton lands a blow to the gut and then Beal's delivery across the ring. Orton follows him with a flying head scissors, but special delivery dodges a second one and Orton crashes himself on the top rope. Jones suplexes Orton into the ring for two, but Orton comes back and rams SD into the buckle before hitting a splash off the second rope for the win. A perfectly acceptable hard-fought match here with a decent pace. Well-timed comebacks. Orton gets the win, rolls along. And I thought it was kind of important for him to get a win like this. It seems like a lot of times he's just eating Piper's jobs as like his backup. So it's always good for them to kind of ground Orton and reset and let him pick up a win or two on a big show like this. So I thought it was fine. I thought perfect role for SD as always. I went a star and a half for this perfectly acceptable night or match full of wrestling.
Yes, I'll give it a star and a half as well. And it, at the time, very weird that Orton would be Piperless. I thought we would. I didn't see the card ahead of time, so I assumed that Piper would be on later, and he's not even here. Yeah. So a very rare solo Orton appearance for the first time.
That's good. In, let him breathe a little bit.
Exactly. I agree 100%. SD, I love when SD wears Philadelphia Phillies colored stuff. I think that's awesome. And he's still from Philly. He is not from Antigua in the West Indies. I thought I used to notice it, and then when I heard Cesaro mention it in the second episode of Titans that SD Jones had the bullet hole in his back, very weird. You know, we used to think about it, and then it actually came up. But this perfectly acceptable match. Your runtime was 12:07. Did it seem like 12:07? Another match that didn't seem that long. So weird. And it was funny because, as I've said tonight, every match seemed to have a real deliberate pace to it anyway. It just didn't feel like long matches. Mm-hmm. The next match feels very long. But that's just because it was a really good match that just I knew was going to be long. But this didn't feel like a 12:07 match. It really didn't. And
it's weird, too. Like you said, it's weird that Piper's not there. But it's also weird to see Orton not back out on the show later. Like, it feels like whenever he's on a show, he wrestles, then he's back out for an interview, or he's back out for interfering in another match. Like,
right.
It was kind of weird that he just comes out, wrestles a match, and we never see him again. Like, I'm so used to him being all over the fucking show, because like you said,
exactly,
he's always out there with Piper in one way or another. So it's kind of interesting to see him not reemerge one way or the other. He's just, you know, wrestles, and he's gone. It was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Very strange. But a fun match, and two good workers, and I thought Orton's finisher just seemed a little clunky. Like, I didn't know what he was attempting to do, but I think he realized that SD was too far out. So SD was too far out from the top rope, so it made Orton's finisher look a little off. But otherwise, it seemed like it was you know, typical match fare. And at 12:07, Cowboy Bob Orton gets the victory. All right, next up, JR, it'll be the first half break after this, but definitely a huge main event anywhere in the world, as Gorilla would say. You talked about, of course, our new World Tag Team Champions, the Dream Team, up in Montreal, taking on, who was it, Dino Bravo, and who the hell was the other guy? Oh, Haku. Well,
Tonga Kid.
Sorry, the Tonga Kid. Well, two teams, JR, that are red hot on the...
red hot.
Red hot. Red hot on the tag team championship trail. These two teams here. Second time we've seen them in, is it back-to-back months? Or second time in 3 months?
No, it was July. We saw them go to the
curfew. Yeah, so second time in 3 months for these guys, for these two teams. And they are?
The Hot Foundation against the British Bulldogs. Of course, a big rematch, like you said, from July when they had the curfew draw. Jimmy Hart leads out the Hart Foundation, clearly becoming much more comfortable with the general presentation and heel role as a tag team. Bulldogs are locked in and focused and very, very, very jacked up. Gorilla says this match reeks of connotations and overtones, which is an awesome line.
Yes.
Jesse says the winners could definitely get a tag team title shot. Dynamite and Brett open things up with some posturing and early counters. Brett tries for a dropkick, but Dynamite catches him and slings him into the corner, sending Brett outside to regroup. Things settle down as Brett returns and regains his bearings. Dynamite wins the lockup and goes to a hammerlock. Brett reverses it, which backfires as Dynamite leverages him to the floor to a huge pop and more regrouping. Brett slides in but tags Anvil to try something new as Dynamite also tags out. Anvil buries a boot to the gut and slams Davey, but Davey comes right back and hits a big body slam of his own. Davey continues to frustrate Anvil, drop-kicking him to the floor as Jesse says Jimmy really needs to regroup and reassess his strategy. Brett tags in as Jesse thinks he needs to get one of the Bulldogs trapped in their corner. Brett slugs away as Davey slips free and gets a forward victory roll for two. Brett finally turns that momentum with a knee to the gut, followed by some hard strikes on the mat. He slings Davey into Anvil's boot and then makes the tag. Anvil lays the wood with forearms and kicks and then tags in Brett, who hits a drop kick and follows with a big uppercut. The Hearts keep tagging in and out while putting a beating on Davey, including an Anvil bear hug. Gorilla and Jesse discuss Anvil's football career as Davey punches out of the hold and tags in Dynamite, who cleans house on both Hearts. Dynamite would hit the ropes, but Brett drills him with a knee to the lower back to cut him down and put Anvil back in charge. The Hearts go back to the quick tags and double teams, including Hart slamming Dynamite hard on the concrete floor outside the ring. The Hearts continue to pour on the crisp, effective offense as things are looking dire for Dynamite now. Dynamite gets close to a tag, but the Hearts break it up, leading to Davey chasing Brett all around the ring, allowing Anvil to choke away in the corner. Anvil hooks a tight front face lock, but as Dynamite drove forward and made the tag, Brett tied up the ref, keeping the Hearts in control. Brett tags back in and nearly drops Dynamite on his head with a botched backbreaker and then continues to punch away until Dynamite gets a backslide, but Anvil makes a save. Brett whiffs on a dive and crotches himself in the ropes, allowing Dynamite to finally tag to a huge pop. Davey comes in and runs through Brett with his power offense, picking up near falls along the way as Anvil keeps making the save whenever he could. Brett regains control and tags an Anvil with an axe blow to the chest of Davey, who is draped on Brett's knee. Anvil clubs away until tagging Brett, who came flying in with a clothesline off the top rope as Anvil had Davey hoisted up. However, as the referee pushed Anvil out of the ring, Dynamite flies off the top and hits Brett with a headbutt and then covers for the win, which pisses off Jesse since Dynamite was not the legal man. After the bout, the Hearts hammer Dynamite with Jimmy Hart's megaphone, leaving him bloodied in the ring. Another strong tag match here with more great chemistry, a really fun double heat segment. The Hearts are so good at heel tactics and cheating. There's, with the, you know, distracting the ref or Anvil making the saves and using it, using Anvil's boot or slingshots and double team. Like, they're getting so good at these heel tactics already. The Bulldogs are crisp in their offense and their comebacks with their timing, and they get the huge win and turn their eyes to the tag titles, as Jesse, of course, mentioned earlier, that the winner of this would be in position for a tag title shot. And I went 3.5 on this one, Scott. I thought it was a beat better than the one back in July, which I liked a lot as well. But I like this one better.
I like this one better, too. I'm giving it 4 stars. It was, again, fantastic storytelling. And I feel like, and not a knock on Alfred, but I feel like Jesse being here even is adding an extra half star to all these matches. Because
yeah. And I went,
he's
I
just
went 3
good at
in
it.
That July one. So, yeah, definitely. I definitely felt it was a tick better. Just
yeah. Jesse, and this is where we see Jesse's real heel comfort, because he's giving Gorilla the business and he's bitching about bad, you know, the number of times that Gorilla complain or says that guys are, you know, have 25 extra pounds is about as often as as Jesse used to bitch that referees counts were too slow for heels and too fast for baby faces. The Bulldogs, I'm really getting technical here. Of all the great babyface tag teams we've ever seen, the Bulldogs are good at match starts. Like, they're so good at getting out fired up by around with the two heels, setting up for the long heel heat segment, which is what we had here. Davey and Dynamite just know how to set something up, you know, and get the crowd going and get the heels all flustered before we get into the heat segment. They're really good at that. They're really good match starters. And it showed here. It really set the tone for the rest of the match. Poor Gil Roman, who's the referee. Jesse trashes every ref, but Gorilla is really, I mean, I don't know why Gil Roman has incurred Gorilla's wrath, but every time he does a match, Dick Kroll doesn't get made fun of, but boy, Gil Roman gets destroyed.
Well, you have to wonder if he really hated him or if they were like friends and he was ribbing him constantly. I don't know.
Yeah, that.
Well, Gorilla could be either way. I mean, he could really hate the guy and he's just torching him, or they could be buddies and he's just playing, you know,
He's throwing ribs at him. Yeah, exactly. I love the ending. Did you find it? Let me ask you something. Did you find it odd that Gorilla called this an upset?
Yeah,
would you call
this an
upset?
I thought both teams are pretty equal. I don't know. Maybe just meant because of Jimmy Hart. And I mean, they've been around about the same amount of time. Yeah, it was kind of weird.
Very strange.
I actually thought it was telegraphed a bit because the Dream Team were now champions and they kept going on about how the winners of this would be number one contenders or at least in line for a title match. Like, I thought it kind of gave away that Bulldogs would pull this one out. I mean, I guess it was intuitive anyway, but I kind of wish they didn't keep harping on it.
Right.
And I know we're usually sticklers for that we like that kind of stuff, but I don't know. Coming off the draw with both teams kind of being in equal position, you could have really argued either one for the win. So I kind of wish they'd have saved it for after the match. Like, after the Bulldogs win, they kind of go on about, like, how, okay, this could set them up now for a title match. Just, the way they kind of just telegraphed that the winner of this was going on a feud with the Dream Team, and clearly it's not going to be the Hart Foundation. So it's, I felt like in some ways they tipped it a bit. I mean, luckily the match is so good that it doesn't even matter. But just kind of a minor, bitching point I caught on to was that I was like, okay, all right, we kind of know now that they're going to win because they keep harping about this being a top contenders match and the champions are heels.
Yes, that is true. Yeah, I agree with that. That is funny. But I mean, just a tremendous match, just tremendous back and forth match, two fantastic teams and really, incredible chemistry. I'm sure they're working all over the circuit and you could tell they are because they are very comfortable with each other. And they work very snug together. So I more is going to come from these two teams. There's no doubt about it. So, all right. And that was our longest match of the night at 18:31.
Just hedging out your London Calling opener by a second.
Yes, by 11 seconds. And don't forget, our main event last month, JR, was 24:02.
Yeah, and they make up for it at the back end of this card where everything else gets shrunken down after the long matches. We had 18:20, 10:06, 6:57, 13:50, 12:07, and 18:31. So a pretty long first half of this card.
Yeah, and they definitely show it when they turn the gas off in the second half. But all right, why don't we take a break? Again, JR, great show so far. I've enjoyed pretty much every match.
Me too. Yeah, it's been great. I think our best to date. We'll see if it
best to date. We'll see if it keeps up in the second half. We'll of course have our mid show interviews and move along. So, September 23rd, 1985, from Madison Square Garden. More after this because Autobahn says so.
Driving on the Autobahn. You allow me the latest game. I don't ask for much, but enough room to spread my way. And the world finna know my name. I don't ask.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
This is legendary ring announcer and WWE Hall of Famer, the Fink, Howard Finkel, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
All right, Nation, we are back here talking the September 23rd, 1985 Madison Square Garden house show for the WWF. Hopefully you're enjoying that. And Scott, no matter how much you try, sir, I always tell you, you cannot get money for nothing. And also trying to tell you that is Dire Straits playing that song underneath us talking right now. Mm-hmm. That is because it's one of the key songs that we'll be discussing here on a Pop Culture Corner. And as always, that's my turn to throw it over to you.
That's right.
Cue is the word I was looking for. It cannot come to my head quick enough. My cue. Turn it over to you, sir.
Money for nothing. Money for nothing, and the cue's for free. Yes, 2 days before. Just a reminder, we didn't mention it earlier in the show, but
we
are back to Mondays. This is a Monday house show again, after having a couple of Saturdays and a Friday. So this was 2 days before, September 21st, when the newest Billboard Top Hot 100 would come out. Number one was indeed Money for Nothing.
TV.
Of course, Sting singing in the background from their fantastic album, Brothers in Arms. Tremendous album by
They really
Martin
suck it up, huh? I mean, how is MTV not going to run that fucking song when you call them out?
I know, really.
It's still burgeoning. I mean, it was, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like they cheated a bit.
Yeah, they probably did. But, yeah, Money for Nothing and Chicks for Free. Dire Straits from Brothers in Arms at number one. Number two, a little Cool in the Gang, a little Cherish. Cherish the love we had. I didn't realize the song was that old. I thought that was the early 80s. They were number two.
Pure
number three.
Off, another Dentist Office song right there.
Oh, that is so Dentist song right there. While it's playing in the while the drill's
time.
Going.
Big time Dentist Office.
Big time Dentist song. Last week's number one, JR, was knocked down two spots to three, and that was little John Parr with the song San Elmo's Fire, Man in Motion from the San Elmo's Fire movie, which is one of the hottest movies of 1985. We just didn't catch the week that it came out. This isn't the love theme that everybody knows. This is the actual song. The guy sings, you know, gonna be the man in motion. More Tina Turner, who of course played the Garden last month, drops two spots from two to four with We Don't Need Another Hero from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Number five, moving up a spot. Guess who's got another single on the top ten, JR? Our guy, Phil Collins. Don't Lose My Number. Billy, don't you lose
That's
my
number.
That's
the one he lip synced, right? Or is that Milli Vanilli's?
Milli Vanilli lip synced. Number six,
like almost,
almost the same name, yeah. Number six, moving up two spots. Freedom by Wham. I didn't think Wham was still out. Was still around at this point. Mm-hmm. Number seven, Pop Life by Prince and the Revolution. I don't remember that song. Number eight was The Power of Love by Huey Lewis, because that was coming off of Back to the Future was still in the theaters and doing tremendously well. Number 9, Oh Sheila by Ready for the World. Oh Sheila. And then at number 10 was Dress You Up by Madonna.
Pretty hot top 10 this week.
Yeah, a lot of hot, great artists there. So, I don't know what the anything else here. Oh, and Pat Benatar, just cheating a little bit. Dare Me by the Pointer Sisters was 11, and Invincible by Billie Jean from The Legend of Billie Jean. We will be invincible. And of course, the great song. I'm sure, you know, I'll save it because it'll probably move up into the top 10 in October, so I'll hold off. But there's a great song at number 13. So there's your Hot 100 for that week. Came out 2 days before, September 21st, 1985. All right, Jared, we only have one movie this week, so the movie section's a little quick. Came out the day before. It made $4.57 million. Sounds like a sci-fi movie. It is called Creator.
Okay, let's look
it up. Not Crater, Creator.
Let's see here. Creator, music, other media, film. 1985 film starring Peter O'Toole.
Really?
Also starring Mariel Hemingway, mm-hmm. Vincent Spano, father of Jesse, Virginia Madsen, David Ogden Steers, John Denver, not to be confused with John Denver.
Denver.
Head of the Tigar. Rance Howard, Ellen Gear, blah, 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 blah. Dr. Harry Walper is an eccentric medical professor teaching at a small Southern California college, obsessed with making a clone of his wife Lucy, who died in childbirth 30 years earlier. Harry hires Boris Lafkin, a struggling pre-med student, as his personal assistant to help him with his experiments, and on from there. So there's also a character named Dr. Sid Kohenbach.
Kohenbach.
Yeah, all but cloning. Only a 107 runtime, so kind of a short movie.
Short movie. But yes, made $4.57 million at the box office. So just one movie this week. Mm-hmm. All right, JR, we're in September now.
Was that
so
just that opening week it made that much?
Yeah, no, that's what it made overall.
Okay.
Which, again, doesn't say much. Right. All right, let's go to Major League Baseball, hot and heavy in the pennant races. On that Monday, the Bronx Bombers had off. The Yankees defeated the Mets defeated the Phillies 4-1 in Philadelphia. Because we're still in the pennant race. That's why we care. The Yankees are having a great season, 88-61, but that's right. Still 6 games back at the Blue Jays.
Fuck you,
and
Kelly.
Time was running out. Fuck you, Kelly. Not Kelly Taylor. AL West, the Angels, still a race in the AL West. The Angels only a half game ahead of the Kansas City Royals. In the NL East, the Cardinals moved ahead 3 games over the Mets. And in the West, the Dodgers comfortably ahead 6 games over Cincinnati. So the next time we have our next pop culture report, JR, we will be in the postseason in Major League Baseball. Yes, we will. Well, it'll be mid-October, so definitely.
It's not like these days where it's like November to December.
I know. Yeah, I know, exactly. December to December. Guess what? Not only do we have baseball now, JR, but we're in September, so it's time to take the field. It is week. That's right. The 1985 NFL season is in week 3. Oh, yeah. Look at that sweet NFL film music right here. Come on. Couldn't you see Jeff getting pass interference on his brother as he's trying to catch the ball? here are your Week 3 NFL scores. Bears over the Vikings, 33-24. Chargers beat the Bengals, 44-41. Dan Fouts had 344 yards passing. Eagles beat the Redskins, 19-6. Giants beat the Cardinals, who were still in St. Louis, 27-17. Broncos beat the Falcons, 44-28. Cowboys over Cleveland.
Take that, Chad.
Yeah, Cowboys beat Cleveland, 20-7. Saints beat the Bucks, 20-13. Colts over the Lions, 14-6. Pats beat the Bills, 17-14.
Yeah,
I know. Yes, but more things change. Steelers 20, Oilers nothing. Jets. This wouldn't happen now. Jets go into Lambeau and beat the Packers 24-3. Kenny O'Brien with 100. Kenny O'Brien with 138 yards passing.
New York Freeman Sack McNeil's, Exchange.
That's right. Freeman McNeil with 64 yards rushing, and I almost called him Heath Shuler. Mickey Shuler, 50 yards receiving. So a win for the Jets. Jets on the road. Dolphins beat the Chiefs 31-0. Niners beat the Raiders 34-10. And going on as we speak, JR, at the Garden, out at the Kingdome in Seattle, Monday Night Football, the Rams beat the Seahawks 35-24.
What a shit week of games. It was like no close games.
No, there really was. A couple of Pats. Pats Bills was close. Well, Chargers-Bengals looked like it was fun. Fouls threw for 344. One of our favorite color commentators, JR, Chris Collinsworth. You're a big Collinsworth guy.
Everyone's probably bitching, oh, NFL's going to decline. These games suck. It's like they don't know.
Exactly.
We should predict the game. So you should give me the slate for next week.
All right, I'll do that. When we go to October, I'll give you the two teams. If you think of 1985, and you can tell me who wins.
Sounds good.
All right. Also going on at the moment is college football is in its – I'm not going to read every single Division I game. But no, I'm not going
to. You can be like two.
No, I'm not going to do that. Let me take a quick check of week four of the college football season. Let me find the high ranking teams here. USC was ranked third. They lost to Baylor at home 20-13. Florida State was sixth. They beat Memphis 19-10. Iowa was fourth. Chuck Long was on that team. They beat Northern Illinois 48-20. LSU was ninth. They beat Colorado State. Let me see. I couldn't cut and paste this. This was a little tricky. Ohio State was 7th. They beat Colorado 36-13. Penn State was 10th. They beat East Carolina 17-10.
That's good. We can do top 10 for college.
Yeah, I can't find who the number one team is. They must have the number one team was probably Oklahoma. It looks like they had the week off.
Jim Ross was checking it in his car in the fucking parking lot. Bomber Sooner!
I've been waiting to do this all week. We have this might be the first official gag of the reboot. The previous week, JR, at Madison Square Garden, your favorite Canadian artist, Bryan Adams, was belting out Heaven at the it was the Reckless Tour. And you ready for this? You need to look up this guy. The opening act's name was?
Matt Rotella.
No, but this is his pseudonym. Cock Robin.
What?
That's the guy's name. The opening act's name was Cock Robin.
All right, it's a band. Who Killed Cock Robin is apparently an English nursery rhyme. I wonder if Parr was aware of that.
Well, here we go.
The earliest record of the rhyme is on Tommy Thumb's Pretty Songbook, published in 1744. Who killed Cock Robin, I said, the sparrow, with my bow and arrow? I killed Cock Robin. Who saw him die, said D'Amato, with my little eye? I saw him die. Who caught his blood? I said the fish. My little dish, I caught his blood. It goes on and on from there, ending with the verse, all the birds in the air fell a-sighting and a-sobbing when they heard the bell toll for poor Cock Robin.
Yep.
And here's a band, an American pop rock band, mostly popular in the 1980s, particularly in continental Europe, where it achieved major success with the single The Promise You Made. And we know our closing music tonight. It was founded by singer-songwriter Peter Kingsbury in 1982, disbanded in 1990, reformed in 2006, Scott.
Wow.
And they're still releasing albums. The band's latest album, Chinese Driver, was released on March 11th, 2006. So I don't know if like the minivan included in that album or what. But Cock Robin was the name of their first album as well. So when your heart is – here are their singles. When Your Heart Is Weak, The Promise You Made, Thought You Were On My Side, When Your Heart Is Weak, Again, Once We May Have Known, Just Around the Corner, The Biggest Fool of All, El Norte, Worlds Apart, Manzanar, and Straighter Line. They also have the Best of Cock Robin. Came out in 1991.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
So listen to the end of the show for Cock Robin's hit song. We'll be closing out this week.
Yes. Okay. And one final note. Guess whose birthday is today?
Look at the petition there, Red Robin. Change your name of the change to Cock Robin. Cock Robin.
Cock Robin.
Hey.
Hey. So, guess who was born on
I think it's the name
September
of the hotel D'Amato staying at down in Aruba on his vacation.
I thought that was the name of the piano player at the bar. Ladies and gentlemen, karaoke with Mr. Cock Robin. I wonder if that's the name. That might be the name he's giving the women at the bar.
Or he's checked in.
You're
pseudonym.
A singer?
He uses a fake name when he checks into the hotel.
Exactly.
Can I talk to John D'Amato? I'm sorry, we don't have anyone with that name. Oh, I'm sorry. Can you connect me with Cock Robin's room?
He just checked out, but Otto Vons is here.
Yes.
Oh, God. By the way,
I'm going to put my Cock Robin in her Otto Vons.
Today's there's somebody who was born, JR, on September 23rd, 1985. You probably
Matt
think
Rotella.
It's a piece of shit. Well, no, he just looks like he's that old. No, what was he, three? Yeah. Is that that picture that's on your – is that how old he was? Was it 1985, that picture on your wedding collage?
With dopey eyes. No, I think that was a couple years later. The one thing that's never changed with him is that dumb – those dumb dopey eyes that have been housed in that face for – since he was born. Same
no.
vapid look.
Oh, God. Oh, he is the vapid. No, this is a guy that you used to like.
Never leaves.
That you probably hated. You probably hate his guts now. I don't know. I don't even think he's in the league anymore. But on this date, September 23rd, 1985.
Bill Belichick.
The birth of future Yankee reliever Jabba Chamberlain.
Huh.
Was born on that date.
He's born Justin Chamberlain.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know where he – so he signed up with someone, I think.
He's not with the Tigers anymore, right?
No, he's Miami. Some team signed him. It's like a minor league deal or something this offseason.
Let's take a quick peek here.
Are you done with your pop culture while you're looking?
We are concluded.
It was worth it for Cock Robin this week. That was good.
It was worth it for the great car. All right, Jabba. He
is build up to the
he is in Milwaukee. He's
okay,
a Brewer.
That's where he is. I knew he had signed somewhere. It was a great build-up to the explosion of Cock Robin at the end of that.
The explosion of Cock Robin in Autobahn.
Right. Let's go backstage where Jesse Ventura is to backstage chat with Don Morocco and Mr. Fuji. Talks about how much he loves it when Morocco dedicates that reverse pile driver to him during his matches. Morocco and Fuji gush over Jesse and then issue a threat to Ricky Steamboat. Morocco says tonight he will hit that pile driver and dedicate it to the body. Gorilla is also backstage. Talks to Terry Funk and Jimmy Hart. Hart says Funk is a bounty hunter and he's out for revenge on JYD tonight after the dog humiliated Jimmy on TNT. Funk says there are more important things than junkyard dogs such as Tito Santana and Hulk Hogan's championships, but he is the best in his profession and the dog is a buffoon and a clown and he'll take him out first because he's not a junkyard dog. He's not an egg-sucking dog. He's not a mad dog. He is a... jackass. Funk says, first things first, he'll take care of the score, and then he'll go on to the gold. So, great promo by the Funker there.
Yes, I love the egg-sucking dog.
Yeah, it was great to – I didn't realize you ever broke that out on WWF TV. I knew.
I never do that either. I actually made a point and typed it in my notes. I never – AOJYD, you're an egg-sucking dog, and you're nothing but a – we don't allow – I don't know what he was veiling when he said that. We don't allow you jackasses on our farm. Oh, really? Okay. You and Paul Orndorff?
Right.
All right. Yes. And then back to the then we go back to the ring, mm-hmm. where we finally conclude this bizarre 1985 saga we've had of this fine gentleman and Bobby Heenan's strained relationship with him.
I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the run of The Missing Link. A guy that I'd never really seen anything of. So, yeah, he was still working around here. He got traded to Jimmy Hart in exchange for... Heenan traded the Missing Link and Adrian Adonis to Jimmy Hart. We didn't catch that in the note earlier for King Kong Bundy. That's the actual trade that went down. In his final televised match on Primetime Wrestling on November 12th, taped October 12th at the Boston Garden, Paul Orndorff pinned the Missing Link in less than 5 minutes with a high knee when Link was distracted by Jimmy Hart shouting into his megaphone. That was one of the $50,000 bounty matches where Heenan would have paid his old charge if Link could put Orndorff out of action. He abruptly left in October due to drug issues. Which I think Kelly had alluded to last month on our show last week. In November 85, went on to World Class, was first managed by Percy Pringle, only to turn face when saving Sunshine from attack from the Great Kabuki. In late 86, he went to the UWF, managed by Dark Journey, returned to World Class, and eventually to Puerto Rico. Retired in the 1990s, but returned to the independent circuit as Missing Link in 2004, wrestling his son Jason Sterling and Edge. His last match was against Al Jihad in Buffalo, New York on May 7th, 2007. Of course, admitted a steroid and alcohol abuser during his career. Had an autobiography in 2006, discussed his addictions to steroids, alcohol, and drugs. Did a lot of lectures in schools and prisons and passed away after a long battle with lung cancer in August of 2007. That's been an interesting run. I mean, we've talked a lot about his pairing with Heenan and how odd it seemed. It seems even weirder that he never really gets out of this first gear. I guess they were kind of prepping him for that feud with Orndorff, but then he gets dumped from Heenan anyway, so it didn't make as much sense, and he never really does much. I mean, he seemed like a guy, maybe like a year later, would be a prime Hogan feud guy. Hogan didn't seem to be in feuds with guys like this just yet. He seemed more like an 86, 87 Hogan house show circuit guy, so maybe eventually they were prepping him for that, but I don't know. I've enjoyed the gimmick. Like, I thought he really dove into it. I mean, we haven't seen him in any kind of long matches, so I can't speak to his in-ring besides just these squashes. But Any thoughts just on him in general before we get to the match?
I'll have more comments when you conclude yours, because the match, the way this match goes, kind of tells me what the problem was. But if he was like, you know what I think did it for him? He was in such great shape. Obviously, as you mentioned, he was on the sauce. But even if he was like just, you know, kind of like normal sized, or he was like Adrian Adonis size or whatever, then I don't think he would have done much.
Right.
I think Vince liked him because he was pretty chiseled. But let me go ahead and give your analysis, because my comments about what the problem was stem from this match. So why don't you go ahead and give your analysis, because I got something that kind of piggybacks the reasoning why I think the missing link was gone besides the drugs. But go ahead.
Okay. Link's still here, stomping around, looking for another victim. This may be his toughest test to date as he takes on the feisty Lanny Poffo. Link stalks Poffo off the bell, but Lanny ducks and flips around to avoid him. Link gets his hands on him finally, but Link with Lanny cartwheels away. Link is able to whip Poffo in, but Lanny dodges a headbutt, and Link is getting frustrated as he checks in with Heenan. Poffo walks into a bear hug, but quickly claps free from it and takes Link over with a monkey flip. Link grabs a chair, but Bobby yanks it away from him. Link returns to the ring and finally catches Poffo and works him over, but misses another headbutt. Link recovers and starts to punch and scratch away, and then drops Poffo hard with a falling power slam. Poffo dodges the headbutt off the middle rope, and then peppers a couple of shots in on Link. Poffo went for a monkey flip in the corner, but Heenan held Link's tights to keep him there. Poffo smashed back hard into the mat on that miss, and then Link finishes him with a flying headbutt. Poffo definitely gives Link a run for his money. He was a bit out of sorts, not really well-paced or cohesive as his other matches to this point. Poffo didn't get much to show off either. I thought it was fine filler to keep Link chugging along, but at some point he needs to elevate past what we've seen. We've established what he is. We need to get him into something, but I didn't think this was the best match for him. He seemed very out of it, and maybe it was the drugs, I don't know. But he seemed to not really be with it on this night, and Poffo gets a few spots in, but I don't know. It seemed like they couldn't decide if they wanted it to be a squash or a competitive match, and they would just kind of get this nonsense in the middle of it that doesn't really connect on any level.
This is a half star for me. I almost gave it a dud. I understood for a majority of the Missing Link's matches that he was a guy who was, you know, a missing link. He was a little unusual. He was an enigma. He kind of – but this
– You think you know me.
You think you know me. You think you know me. Which is funny because an Edge match just started on Studio B. So it's funny that you just said that as that started. But for me, this match, like you were saying, he didn't seem to know what he was doing. He was almost too much like – all right, we get it, Link. You're kind of all over the place, but can you get back to the fucking match, please, and do something? Like he'd do a move, and then he kind of walk around. Like, that was just going overboard, that part. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The whole part of acting like you don't know where the fuck you are was too much now. Now you're kind of ruining your matches. And I think besides the drugs part, I think that's what made Vince realize, all right, you know, this guy's fucking useless. And he's
a lot into him, though. They did the whole cave thing on TNT.
And, yeah, they did. I think that's what the frustrating part is. And I think he didn't do Bobby any favors.
I get why they did the Bobby thing for the bounty. Like, I mean, obviously he's bringing in this maniac to try and kill Orndorff, but I really think they just fucked this thing up from the start. Like, I think he should have been with Fuji from the start, and he should have gotten thrown into a feud with someone a little bit bigger, like have Fuji sick him on someone out of the gate instead of, you know, Heenan brings him in for the bounty, but he hasn't even gone after Orndorff yet that we've seen. I mean, he's just meandering through these matches. So it's just kind of weird. He seemed like they were hyping him up for a guy that was either going to go after Orndorff or make a big splash. And instead, and I know this was the style. You work your way up, and it's worked really well for guys like Bundy or whatnot. But Link, like you said, I mean, I think you made a good point. He was going to get tiresome with the way he was doing things. Like, you only want to see so many of Link squashes. There's one thing when Bundy's just murdering guys. But Link is just, you know, stumbling through these matches, and it's like, all right, the first couple were fun, but by the fifth straight, we're kind of like, all right, do something now, do something.
Right. Exactly. And he wasn't. And I think that combined with the drugs, I think just led him down the bad path. And that was the end of that. I think Vince right now still kind of building the WrestleMania momentum and really pushing the company. He doesn't have any patience for these guys that aren't going to, you know, that aren't going to bring the goods. So, it's sad because they did put a lot of effort into him. but he was going to flop. It just – it wasn't working out, and the drugs didn't help either. So the missing link wins. He's undefeated. This might be the first guy ever that actually concludes his MSG career undefeated. It goes
MSG,
nowhere.
For sure, yeah. He ended up losing that match to Orndorff. I was saying he may have his whole run be undefeated. But, yeah, MSG, he's undefeated. And, I mean, I forgot how many we've seen total. Five, maybe? Four or five.
Five, yeah. And it doesn't matter. So there you go. Missing link wins. Your length, now we're getting down to the short matches. This was 5:59. Yeah. So it's still, not, still 6 minutes. All right, next up, JR, probably our other main event match of the mm-hmm. evening, one of the best feuds of 85 that I feel like we haven't totally gotten into yet, and we're definitely into it now, and we saw the interviews earlier on, and now here we are.
All right, Ricky Steamboat battling the Magnificent Morocco, a great upper mid-card feud between a perfect dichotomy of styles and personalities. We've seen it nudged along on TNT, and it's starting to really get cranking now, of course. We call back to that attack on TV earlier when Steamboat got attacked by Morocco and Fuji and they hung him from the top rope with the belt. So this is all playing up into this. And Morocco attacks Steamboat at the bell, hammers away aggressively until Steamer comes back with some chops to the head and to the chest all over the ring as the crowd is cheering him on. Steamboat keeps attacking Morocco with the belt from his robe as Gorilla says this is payback for that TV attack and Jesse's demanding a DQ. Steamer follows up with a huge chop to the head off the top and then throws Morocco to the floor where he meets him with a chop off the apron. Steamboat works him over outside before knocking him back in the ring and finally disrobing. Inside, Steamboat keeps laying in chops and chokes Morocco with his robe, pissing off Jesse again. Steamboat keeps bringing the heat, spiking Morocco to the mat and hammering away until Fuji gets involved and trips Dragon up to kill his momentum. Gorilla bitches about managers being allowed to ringside again as Morocco sticks a thumb in the eye and then pitches Steamboat to the floor where Fuji cracks him with his cane. Morocco heads back out and shoves Steamboat into the barricade and clobbers him as he gets back in the ring and then finally slingshots him back inside. Morocco slow dings down with a nerve hold, keeping it locked on both on the mat and in a standing position. Steamboat eventually fires his way out of it with some karate chops, but Morocco cuts him off by slinging him into the corner and kicking away. Morocco goes right back to the nerve hold before releasing it and setting up for a pile driver. He dedicates it to Jesse as he promised. Steamboat kicks away to prevent the move and then is able to yank Morocco into the post shoulder first. Steamboat blocks the nerve hold and chops and punches away and then slingshots him to the post, busting him wide open. Steamboat hammers away at the cut and Morocco's just gushing blood. Steamboat goes for a splash but eats Morocco's knees. Morocco tries to chuck Steamboat outside, but the Dragon skins the cat back in, where he walked into a Morocco suplex. Fuji climbs on the apron, and Steamboat slugs him in the head and then kicks Morocco into his manager. The crowd's going nuts now as Steamboat heads up top, but Fuji recovers and chucks 40 pounds of salt, as Gorilla calls it, in his eyes for the DQ. After the bell, Morocco and Fuji beat the piss out of the Dragon with the cane before stalking to the back. I thought it was a really fun match. It clocks in slightly lower because of that stupid nerve hold that Morocco doesn't insist on using that went too long. But the heat was fantastic. The healing by Morocco and Fuji was awesome. Steamboat didn't have to do much more than chop throughout this whole thing, but it's fueled with such revenge and anger that it felt right that he just wanted to keep chopping him across his whole body. The finish work, too, is this thing is far from over, and the story here is how Fuji is always helping Morocco, and they work so well as a team. I went 3 stars on this one, Scott. I thought it was a red-hot match.
It was a tremendously red-hot match. I give it three as well. Something about this match, I wasn't sure what, and then I realized Steamboat, I'm not saying he would have ever been a great heel, but when he needed to, like, legitimately brawl, Steamboat could bring the goods.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole choking out Morocco with the what was he calling it? They're calling it a belt or, like, the strap or what was it? They're
right,
calling
yeah,
it something.
From his rope, yeah.
Yeah, and then the sash, that's what they're calling it. He was choking with his sash. And then Steamboat was getting very comfortable with the brawling tactics, which 1985 you don't really know or see. So very strange, mm-hmm. but entertaining. And I love Morocco was just such a cocky prick. I loved when he was just about to get that pile driver. He was a superior super heavyweight cock robin because he puts him in the he has the pile driver all set. And he actually points – you see him pointing at Jesse, which is so fucking cool.
That's right, yeah.
And then, of course, he gets cauliflower-eared and then the match ends and with the 40 pounds – an entire bag of salt
right, yeah, 40
in his face. And
he threw 40 pounds of salt at him. He probably would have knocked him out cold if he threw 40 pounds of salt at him.
Might as well just throw the whole bag at him unopened. So And then, of course, the brawling
happened. Carrying around a packet that has 40 pounds worth of salt in it. It's pretty funny.
I know, could you?
Stuffed in his robe pocket.
Stuffed in his fucking, in his cane. So there you go. So Morocco, Steamboat wins by DQ. Mm-hmm. Your match time, 12:45. Pretty good length.
Perfect length. I mean, that was perfect. Like I said, you could have maybe knocked out the nerve hold and went a couple of minutes shorter. But overall, it's a perfect length for these guys. You got plenty of heat, plenty of anger, and then the good finish to keep things simmering.
Yeah, no, it's pretty huge. But it was fun. It was a fun match, fun brawl. You know, there are certain guys, even at this stage, 85, that kind of bring the best out of Morocco. I'm sure Parv would disagree, but he knows how to be a good heel, and he knows how to work a good match when he has to. And Steamboat's a guy you really can't have a shitty match with. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You just can't. And it was actually fantastic. And kudos to Morocco for kind of going with the flow and letting Steamboat kind of toss him around a lot. And it worked out great. It worked out great. So I 3 stars for me, 3.5 for me as well. 3.5 for that one, 12:45. All right. They might as well have ended the show. This kind of reminds me of SummerSlam 94. They might as well have ended the show now because these next two were – the last match really disappoints me. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, but it's – all right. Yeah, we'll get to it.
So we'll get to it. Next up, though, another up-and-comer that Vince is trying to really push, taking on one of MSG's old salty dogs.
Moondog Spotty back in the garden this
Spotty!
Month.
Spotty!
Taking on Corporal Kirchner. After a legitimate stint with the U.S. military, Mike Kirchner made his pro wrestling debut in 1980, joined the WWF as an enhancement wrestler, but was given a gimmick overhaul and push when Vince realized he had a legitimate military past. The first Corporal Kirchner vignette aired on August 3rd, made his in-ring debut as the character on August 18th, and of course we'd see him on TNT as well, Scott, when they go out into the jungle and he gives some tips to Gene as to what's going on out there in the world of Corporal Kirchner. You know, it's obviously clear they're trying to replace Sergeant Slaughter. Vince obviously probably been, you know, craving another military character so he could push more of the jingoism and whatnot with the U.S. Mm-hmm. and the military. Right. So he's taking on Kirchner, who's working his way up the ranks, the newest military man. Kirchner's intense and locked in as he stomps around the ring and circles with Spot while he's keeping a hand on his knife, which I thought was funny. He's like staring, yeah. Like squatted down in the middle of the ring holding his knife. Kirchner takes off his gear, but Spot jumps him to get things going. Spot lays in some kicks and punches and then dumps Kirchner hard to the floor. The corporal climbs back up, but Spot clubs him across the chest and hammers away while Kirchner was tied in the ropes. Spot snapmares Kirchner back inside and blocks a sunset flip with a hard right hand before landing another fist to the head off the middle rope. Kirchner dodges a second flying fist, gets up, hammers away before cranking Spot with a knee lift and an airplane spin drop for the win. This was odd booking. Spot, like, ate all of the offense, and then Kirchner had a decent fire up and then finishes things off. I thought Spot looked good in his brief run on offense, but I didn't get really why. Like, unless you try to build up that Kirchner is a guy that could take a beating and fire back, or that he's a youngster trying to learn his way. But I don't know. I would have thought this was more suited for Kirchner just to come in and mow through this guy. Like why does Spot need to get this offense in? The match is only 2:45, and I feel like Kirchner maybe got like three, you know, blips of offense throughout that whole time. I went a dud here just because it's a squash. I think it's better than your standard squash just because I like Spot. But again, it didn't really make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I give it a dud as well. And yeah, Jesse, I wish I typed it and I didn't. Jesse gave that knife like a name. It was like a pop stick.
It was, oh shit, he did call it.
He called it something, but anyway, he gives shade, you know, he's a Navy SEAL, so he was giving shade to the Army guy who was breaking his balls. Called him some goofy
something
nickname.
Sticker or something.
Yeah, some sticker, pot sticker or something like that. No, that's an appetizer.
It was like a frog sticker. It was something like that, frog sticker or something like that. It was something weird, yeah.
But I'm like, he's in the ring with it. What the fuck is he going to do? Is he going to flay Spotty in half or something? Cut the bone? And the match is trash. Not much more. It's a dud as well. Or just doesn't have that thing that Sergeant Slaughter had.
No, definitely not. I mean, Slaughter had been built up for years. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he had the history behind him. I mean, that was, it was just you know, there was no chance. And yeah, Frog Sticker is the name that he calls it. It's a nickname for a knife.
Okay, Frog Sticker.
It's slang for a knife. Yeah, one carries a weapon.
Oh. Yeah. So, all right, and now our main event or our last match of the night, which I thought would have been, you know, halfway decent, but guess not. And it is?
Well, you're a little hard on this one, huh? Junkyard Dog taking on Terry Funk, as teased earlier. I thought it was a great main event on tap, anyway, on paper. Two men that have been warring on TV and going around the circuit. Funk has instilled some great wild madness to the upper mid-card. JYD is a good match for his chaos. JYD gets a huge pop when he comes out to the ring, but Funk attacks him as he enters and works him over on the floor. JYD backdrops Funk on the floor and rolls inside, keeping Funk outside with a headbutt and some right hands. The bell keeps ringing for some reason, which made no sense to me, as JYD heads back inside and slams Funk hard on the floor. Funk finally makes it back inside, but JYD meets him and slings him into the corner, causing Funk to flip right back outside in a nasty bump. Funk climbs back in as JYD again meets him and runs into the ring post. Funk is wobbly and rattled as JYD suplexes him inside for two. Funk pops up and levels JYD with a very clear low blow, annoying Gorilla, saying the ref looked right at it. Funk went to work with leg drops and elbows as Jesse calls JYD ugly. Funk tries a series of headbutts, but JYD no-sells him and then cracks Funk with a pair of his own. Hart hops on the ring and distracts JYD long enough for Funk to hit him from behind. Dog charges Funk in the corner, but Terry rolls him up and puts his feet on the rope for a near fall that gets broken up by the referee because he sees his feet on the rope. As Funk argues with the ref, JYD sneaks in and gets an inside cradle for the flash win. Jimmy Hart comes in the ring and ties up. As JYD's tied up, allows Funk to slam him from behind with the branding iron. Funk works over JYD and then brands Dog before shoving the ref. The attack continued until Funk finally had enough and walked off with Hart. I thought it was a fun brawl. There's not much substance, but it had a great wild pace. The crowd is fired up. I thought it was a really good way to keep the feud going. My only complaint was that it should have probably not ended the show because it's kind of a downer ending and it just kind of ends. But as we've seen, they don't seem to really care. Like we saw that with the curfew draw. And, you know, it was mentioned by, Buddy Joe in the previous feedback he provided us that Joe O'D was that, you know, the main event often was considered in the middle of the show. So I think that was the Steamboat Morocco match probably here. Along with the Colossal Jostle, and it seemed like it just kind of filled out the card to fill out the rest of the time. So it didn't seem to ever care about sending the crowd home happy, per se. So if you look at it from that perspective, this is fine. But I'm kind of curious in your thoughts. It sounds like you really didn't like this. But I thought it was like, I thought it was a perfect short brawl for these two guys. Like, I don't know what more you expect from a fucking Junkyard Dog. It was only 3:34. I thought it was just enough. Like, it was a long night full of wrestling, and this was a fine way to cap it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're right. I didn't feel like it was that good a brawl, though. I felt like JYD did pretty much all the offense. It was almost like a squash. I feel like Terry Funk did practically nothing.
Well, you know what it was? It was the first 3 minutes of what would normally be a longer match, where the face gets a bunch of shine, rattles the heel, and then the heel usually takes over to a heat segment. We just don't get that heat segment. Now, it could have been a time thing. They could have been running long, and they had to cut it. But that's what it felt like to me, that it was the very beginning of what normally would be a longer match. I think that's why JYD ate up the beginning and then just went home.
Yeah. No, you're probably right. I mean, it didn't ruin the night because we had so many great matches on this card that it doesn't ruin anything for me. So I feel like the heels got the upper hand almost the whole night. I mean, did you notice that? At least three or four matches where the heels came away, even if they lost the match, came away with some to keep the feuds hot. Keep them fresh. Curious to see what will happen. Curious to see what will happen in October, because maybe we'll have continuations of these feuds, because I feel like they can continue. So, I mean, I'm okay with it. I was definitely hoping for more, but it's okay. In my opinion, the main event matches were the tag, the Hart Foundation against the Bulldogs, obviously Andre and Bundy.
Yeah, I think the Jostle and the Morocco Steamboat were probably the two big selling points for this night.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's fine. It's fine.
But what's great about this card, and we'll talk about it, is to me they have those two big selling points. And normally they'd kind of fill the card out with, you know, some decent stuff. But here we get two more matches that, in theory, could have also carried a card. You know, like Funk JYD and Hart's Bulldogs could have been the marquee matches on a card. And those are number 3 and 4 on this night, which shows you how they really stacked this one up. I don't know if it's because it was the first fall show back out of the summer or what, but they really loaded this up for a show that doesn't have Hogan or Piper. They really filled this thing up.
Yeah, they definitely did. There was a lot we didn't have on this night. And it ended up being a great match, a great show. And Steamboat was kind of – it was a lot of mid-card that you can see could push to the ceiling. And that includes the Bulldogs, the Hart Foundation, Steamboat, obviously Bundy and Andre, but Bundy being elevated, a lot of elevation on the show, kind of a very important show for the next 6 or 7 months.
Yeah, it sets up the fall. Yep.
Yeah, a lot of elevating and so very important show in my opinion. And let's continue on and get ready for the awards.
Awards time. All right, our match of the night, I went with Hearts Bulldogs. To me, that was 3.5. I didn't have anything else that touched that level. I thought it was the best work match of the night.
It was. I'll agree with you, even though I loved Bundy and Andre, but I probably think I love that match for different reasons.
Right.
I love Hearts Bulldogs was the match of the night.
All right, Scott, I'll be honest. This is the first card I really had a hard time picking, the Drizzler. I went with Kirchner and Spott. But I feel like it's unfair because that was not meant to be good. This was meant to be a squash. But I feel like it was disappointing even for a squash because they kind of went about it wrong. I hate to give it to the opener. You know what I mean?
You're absolutely not giving it to the opener. No way.
And I'm not giving it to Savage. I don't want to give it to Savage Roma.
No, I don't give Savage Tony Romo either. What the fuck,
Orton,
man?
Jones was good. Link Poffo. Maybe Link Lanny. I mean, you could maybe go with that because it was so weird.
Yeah, I would have to vote. I would vote Link and Lanny.
All right, I'm going to change mine. I think after we talked it through, the way Link was acting felt weirder. I think Kirchner's spot was meant to be a shit squash, you know?
So, no, it was. It was. No, Link. Okay. That Link match is right. I don't know what.
It's our second Link worst Drizzler match show. It was against Jose Luis a few shows
back
ago.
Back in June, yep.
All right, MVP of the night, MVP, I went with Andre again here. Just so much larger than life. I loved him laughing at Bundy. I thought that was a great match, a great feud. The whole thing with Colossal Jostle, I thought he was the one that stood out the most on this show.
Yeah, I go with Andre as well. The boss was awesome. And that gives, well, I voted for Andre 3 times for MVP so far this year. We both voted for him each of the last 2 shows, and then I voted for him way back in January.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he's just such a presence when he's on that. It's hard not to go for him. The spoiler award, who's our worst worker. Again, I went with Kirchner. I don't know if it's completely fair. You could give it to Link, but we've kind of seen him. Like, I guess, I don't know. How do you want to qualify it? Is it the worst worker tonight? The worst worker overall? You know, just in general that we watched? You know, the worst worker possible that worked on this card. So, to me, like, that's not Link because we've seen him be better. But on this evening, he was arguably the worst. Like, I don't know. What did you go with?
Yeah, I mean, even the job guys that lost. I mean, Les Thornton looked fine. Lanny looked.
Lanny was okay.
Lanny
that
was
match was not his fault.
It really wasn't. I don't know. I think I have to go with Link
over Kirchner.
Yeah.
Okay.
What the fuck was he doing? At least Kirchner knew what he was doing. He may not do it very well, but at least he knows what he's doing. Link looked all off tonight.
I don't think there's
much
debate. Best moment, I went with Andre's big comeback leading into the DQ. And even that bump, I would put them both up there.
Yeah, I got to put it there because I think the bump was fucking insane.
All right, I'll go Bundy's bump. I think that was the best moment. That was awesome.
Bundy's bump, baby, yeah.
Yeah, my bump. I'm the only one with a fucking bump. All right, Junior Mr. Universe Award named after Tony Atlas. The most juiced. I went with the British Bulldogs for this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought we should give it to Quick Draw.
I want to end it with Quick Draw. Okay, we can give it to Quick Draw.
Let's give it to Quick Draw on his way out the door. I think we should give it.
We'll celebrate him and talk about how
celebrate his death by saying he was fucking roided. Yeah.
So there you go. So McGraw will finish with 2, amazingly enough. Our first and then in his last.
His last.
The last.
Yep.
All right, and overall, Scott, I like this a lot. I think it's the best house show we've seen. I'm going with a 7. 7 out of 10. I thought it was... you know, it was pretty loaded. It had 4 big matches coming in, at least 3 of them delivered, and I still liked Funk JYD. I thought there was nothing bad, as we just discussed. You know, that 5-minute Link match was the worst thing on the card. You're not doing too bad for these house shows. I thought Gorilla and Jesse were a lot of fun. I thought there was a lot of development, a lot of everything kind of had a reason. I like this one.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually up it a little bit. I'm going to give it a 7.5. I thought every match really had a purpose. Guys worked really hard in the ring, told great stories. Seeing Jesse... is good enough for me, and Jesse, you know, doing his job and doing it very well.
Mm-hmm.
He's certainly better than Mean Gene, and I mean, I don't want to say he's better than Alfred. Alfred's just a different kind of color guy,
right?
But
yeah, so that was my highest. Other than that April show, I went 6.5. I'm not counting Mania. Obviously, we went higher, but for house shows, this is the best we've seen in my mind.
Yeah, Yeah, no, it's
you
pretty
went seven
awesome.
And a half in April, so you're about on par with that one.
Yeah, no, that was a great one as well. Even though Bundy was the drizzler that month,
right?
And he was not the drizzler this month.
Well,
not
it wasn't
at all.
His fault either. Again, that was the sweeter.
Our pal, the sweeter, yeah, who think I would never see again. So, yeah, there you go. A 7.5. You gave it a 7. It's a great show. Highly recommend it. It's on YouTube. Did you like that the copy we watched was from the old?
Yeah, 24/7. Well, you always know it's gonna be a long match when you get the friggin' this week in history thing at the bottom.
Oh yeah,
that's
yep.
when you know it's gonna be they're gonna hit a headlock or something coming up because yeah. they didn't flash those things on quick matches. So that's when you know it's going a little bit.
I miss the 24/7 ending, the da-da-da-da with the copyright. I miss that.
I used to hear that in my fucking dreams, like as you fall asleep with the tape running and you'd wake up to it blaring. I always feel bad. I get all those tapes and I'm like, I just never watch them because of the network and everything yeah. else we watch for the site now. It's like, I just have these, you know, 100 plus tapes full of 24/7 recordings.
Yep, I got them mine copies in a bin myself. Yeah, it's very, very tough. Very tough.
Someday.
All right, there we go.
Yeah, so, fun show. It was a really good show. We'll be back next Monday with our Saturday's main event, number 2 from October of 85, or September of 85, I should say.
October.
That's right, October. You're right, October.
October 5th, yep.
We have two October shows, yes. that and then a house show. And, of course, that will feature the return of Kelly Nelson in a couple weeks for the house show. So we'll be excited about that. That'll happen on the 13th. So on the 6th, we'll be back, Saturday's main event. We'll talk all about the happenings. And some of the stuff we saw here tonight, Scott, plays into that show. So
yes, yep.
A lot to talk about. Later this week, there will be a new Clothesline and Headlines. And guess what? I'm actually going to be on this one. Been off the last few. Good announcement today on Twitter. If you saw it, Kevin Kelly will be joining us. Going to talk about all his recent career moves going on. All his shakeups. And he'll talk some New Japan Pro Wrestling as well. Tentatively right now as well scheduled is Brad Stutz to return and talk some CWF. And everything else he has going on. I know he'll be at the Scenic City Rumble this weekend, so I'm sure he'll touch off on that. Mm-hmm. We'll be previewing Fastlane, so talking about this Sunday show as well. So big episode of Close Eyes and Headlines coming this week. And, of course,
Excellent. Check
out last week's main event. You like you mentioned earlier, you had Mr. Helene, and who else was on that? Oh, Nate, right? The Godfather.
The Godfather, Nate Milton, yes. Yeah. Yep.
So be sure to check that out. Check out all our shows on all our feeds, Place Free Nation Wrestling, Place Free Nation Pop, and, of course, Pro Wrestling Only. And follow us on social media, facebook.com/PlaceFreeNation, Twitter, Place Number 2 Free Nation as well. And if you're shopping on Amazon, doing any online shopping here, PlaceFreeNation.com/Amazon takes care of all your needs. Helps us out as well. So keep that coming, too. Anything else you want to talk about before we go?
No, I think we're good. PlaceFreeNation.com. Always a great site, of course. We got some. We're coming up on WrestleMania season. So
oh right, yeah. Let me talk about that. So Tuesday launches our big annual WrestleMania project that we've been working on. There will be a new post every single day from this coming Tuesday, February 28th, all the way through the WrestleMania day. So April 2nd, there will be a new post as part of this project. So there's 33 total. So be sure to check it out. Each and every day throughout the month of March will be a new post. So enjoy that and share your feedback, of course. And that's it. Lots to get excited about.
Yep. Absolutely.
Right, let's wrap up, Scott. We'll be back next week talking some Saturday's main event. Until then, put your cock robin away. We're going to head to bed and we'll talk in a week.
Cock robin from the Otto Vaughn.
I want to hear Lloyd Alfred's hit. Cock robin.
Cock robin with his partner, Otto Vaughn's. Out of the life I lead, numbing the fall.
Remember the promise you made.